WWNR Beckley. The opinions expressed during this program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or advertisers of News Talk 620 WWNR.
Tonight, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the 20,000 members of the Affiliated Construction Trades Foundation. If you're working in West Virginia, they're working for you. Now, Bob Kincaid.
Almost 6 minutes after 7 o'clock. It's Thursday night. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. My apologies for the loss of the internet stream last night. That won't happen tonight, though, will it? No, it won't. But, game time tomorrow's in the afternoon, isn't it? So we should have the stream back, hopefully, by the time Head On kicks in. At any rate, welcome to this Thursday night edition. No dearth of stuff to talk about tonight. Had an interesting email from Ken, and he writes as follows. I was at the Raleigh County Board of Equalization. Now, you guys know what the Board of Equalization is, right? That's where you can protest the amount of property taxes that you're asked to pay. Usually, you can hear crickets and pins dropping in there, because most people don't know about it. The county commission ignored the state tax department, Ken writes. They ignored the state tax department values on reserve coal for Beaver Coal, Anchor Coal, and every other coal company that appealed the assessments, and they put the 2002 values on these properties. In other words, three-year-old property values. Nah, I guess that coal hasn't appreciated. Value of coal's dropping, isn't it? But he asks, why is it that the assessor and the commission will stick it to the little guy but give these coal companies sweetheart deals? Anybody know? He says, I wish you would get to the bottom of this. It's not fair. No, it's not fair. Of course it's not fair. But then again, it's coal. You know, I love movies. It's the last line from the movie Chinatown. Forget about it, Jake. It's big coal. What big coal wants, big coal gets. The morons are on the loose, apparently, and some of them are writing to the newspaper. Hear this? This is a real, live, honest-to-goodness Beckley fish wrap. Couldn't do this if it wasn't. Somebody writes in, you got to listen to this. President Bush does not use religion as a political tool. Woohoo! Set down the Kool-Aid, honey. Because Bush does care, he wants programs that will really help the poor, disabled, and sick. He wants programs that will help the sick if you qualify George Bush as sick, and God knows I do. You know, that's, you know, this person doesn't live in the real world. Listen, there is a difference in murder and gay lifestyles. Bush said in America we have free choice about our lifestyle. No, because if a couple of, for instance, gay people want to live in a married lifestyle, George says that they're second-class citizens and can't do it. But I love that, you know. He wants programs that will really help the poor, disabled, and sick. Yeah, that's why we're going to lose how much Medicaid funding? That's why he's doing everything in his power to kill Medicaid. That's why we're cutting school funding left and right. Yeah. It's just, well, it's just silly. I mean, you can go and read this very ignorant person's letter if you want to. It's just stunning. And then a few pages over, the morons were playing in the legislature too, because lo and behold, you got to love this guy. I mean, consistently wrong. I mean, dumber than a box of rocks. Death penalty John Overington has introduced a bill with assistance from Linda Sumner and our very own Dino Ron Thompson. Dino, Democrat in name only. Dino. Overington introduced a bill that would exempt construction work from the scale in any county or municipal government. You know, that's prevailing wage. Because I guess in Overington's and Sumner's and Thompson's world, people who build our buildings don't deserve a living wage. Now, I expect it from Overington. I mean, this guy apparently has, the IQ of three-day-old dead-in-the-sun, hot-sun mackerel. Linda Sumner, well, you know, I mean, we know what she's interested in. She wants to make sure that the taverns are an appropriate distance from the churches. Sure. Co-sponsored legislation about that, didn't she? Couldn't quite get around to co-sponsoring legislation that would increase the buffer zone between homes and mountain range removal operations. No. Couldn't do that. But she did have time to co-sponsor a bill to make sure that, those working people, those disgusting little people, to make sure that they don't make so much money. You know, those working people, they're just, who do they think they are wanting to get paid? Who do they think they are wanting health care and benefits and pensions? Who do those working people think they are? Gee, thanks, Linda. What would we do without you? Maybe in a couple of years we'll try to find out. But here's the one that baffles me. Ron Thompson, an alleged Democrat out there sponsoring legislation that goes against working family values. Explain that to me. This guy sounds like a Republican. I mean, he's in bed with a couple of absolutely bug spray crazy Republicans. I mean, they printed this Overington guy's picture. I expect it to go woohoo hee hee and run off the page. I mean, the Overington character, he's just got crazy written all over his face. Just remember, Ron Thompson doesn't like working people. Neither does Linda Sumner. I don't know if they're not godly enough to suit him, not rich enough to suit him, but they don't like working people. Just astonishes me. So, yeah, like I said, the loonies are on the loose. What's that Pink Floyd song? The lunatic is on the path. Yeah, there it is. So we've got that. And a little reminder, it's about 14 minutes after 7 o'clock. If you haven't done anything for dinner yet, it's brisket night over at Southern Reds. Got me some for dinner this evening. Honest to Pete, you know, that beef brisket can be one of the toughest cuts of meat on the whole cow. But the way they smoke it and what they do with it, it's as tender as filet mignon. I got a pound of it for $6.95. I got enough to take home for, little sandwiches for lunch tomorrow. It's a great bargain. Great people. Tell them I suggested you drop by. They'll be open for another hour or so, I think. Get a little barbecue, watch the basketball game. WVU game should have just tipped off. Could one of you guys do me a favor and let me know what the score is from time to time? I really want us to get past Creighton. Play Wake Forest. Yeah, Wake Forest may be overrated. We might be able to take them. Let's go Mountaineers. Let's go do a commercial, too. This is News Talk 620, WWNR. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. We'll be right back.
Head On.
There are three things you get at L&S Toyota. Great prices, big selection, no hassles. Now here's the specials of the week. L&S Toyota has brand new 2005 Corollas, over 35 to choose for as low as $13,818, including a $500 factory rebate. Buy a brand new 2005 Camry, over 25 to choose for as low as $17,585, including a $750 factory rebate. Plus, buy Toyota certified pre-owned vehicles with 3.99 APR financing for 48 months, a 6-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, roadside assistance, and a 160-point quality assurance inspection. The specials of the week at L&S Toyota, 300 Rural Acres Drive in Beckley. 05 Corollas, $13,818. 05 Camry, $17,585. Offers on select models with approved credit. Prices plus tax, tag, and registration fees. Dealer retains rebates and incentives. Example, 2001 Solara, $270 per month for 48 months at 3.99% financing with zero down. Offer ends 3/31/05.
There's a right way and a wrong way to bring jobs to West Virginia. There's a high road and a low road. The low road leads to reduced wages and benefits for West Virginia workers. It's a road marked by giveaways and sweetheart deals for those in the fast lane, but it's a dead end for the rest of us. The road less traveled is the high road. It leads to good jobs, fair wages, and responsible development. It's a little harder to navigate, but it's well worth the trip. A message from the ACT Foundation.
Celebrate the risen Lord this Easter Sunday, March 27th at the First Baptist Church of Beckley. Enjoy a free concert featuring Kim and Brian Tabor at the 10:45 a.m. service. The public is welcome and invited to attend. Easter Sunday, March 27th at the First Baptist Church of Beckley.
He's got a brain,
and he's not afraid to use it. Liberally, of course. Here's Bob Kincaid.
Welcome back. Almost 18 minutes after 7 o'clock. Let's see. The phone number, I should remind you. Now, the phone number is 252-6200. Outside Beckley, it's 800-620-9967. And did you catch the great big honking waste of time in Congress today? Hearings. Hearings, by Jove, on steroids. Now, we're losing one or two or three Americans a day in Iraq. Medicaid is on the verge of collapse. The trade deficit just hit another record number. We're breaking records every day on the price of oil. And we're having hearings about baseball players. Now, is it just me, or does that seem like a little bit of a waste of time? Steroids are a problem. But how much did it cost today of our money, that would be yours and mine, how much did it cost today to bring in Jose Canseco, who's had so many steroids over the course of his life that every sentence begins with, "Rrr." Honestly, how much did it cost today to bring Mark McGwire in and let him cry a little bit? How much did it cost today to bring in Sammy Sosa and have his lawyer reading, read a statement that says baseball been very, very good to me, and I never do the steroids? Now get off my back. No, that's not a slur. Some of you apparently aren't old enough to remember Chico Escuela from Saturday Night Live. Remember the Garrett Morris character? Baseball been very, very good to me. Because what's going to come out of it? You honestly think that Republicans are going to move in and take away baseball's antitrust exemption? It should happen. It should have happened 50 years ago. But it's not going to happen. Today was a dog and pony show. You know, I don't care what listen, I guess I'm a little bit libertarian about this. I don't care what an athlete does with his body. I don't. I care what children do. I care about the influence that these pros have on kids. I care about high school athletes who take precursor preparations that wind up having the same or similar effects as steroids. I really do care about that.
But that's a question of parenting and coaching. Don't you agree? You know, whether Barry Bonds winds up taking so many steroids that he winds up with testicles like raisins and legs like toothpicks, I don't care. I think he should have an asterisk put beside his home run record when he finally gets around to breaking Hank Aaron's record. You know, done under the influence of performance-enhancing drugs. But, you know, they're shortening their own lives. Steroids will eventually kill you. A lot sooner than some other substances will. But no, you reckon maybe we spent $50,000 a day, $100,000 to bring in these overpriced guys to say, I don't know what you're talking about. I've never done any steroids. Never mind the fact that you can't tell the difference between where my head ends and my shoulders begin because I don't have a neck. I got legs like toothpicks. No, I don't do steroids. Steroids are bad. You hear me, kids? Steroids are bad. Somebody call my limo. Was that just the stupidest waste of time you've ever seen in your life? Yeah, for my purposes. But there I go again, being all fiscally conservative. You know, they're really changing me. I mean, you know, the conservative revolution is changing America. You're right. It's changing me. Because if the so-called conservatives are going to run out there and be the tax, the borrowing spenders, I guess that it falls to me and the rest of the good liberal Democrats to sort of raise our little hands once in a while and say, can we afford this? Can we afford this war? Can we afford for Paul Bremer to lose $9 billion in a sofa somewhere in the green zone? Can we afford to pay $27 million to haul $82,000 worth of LP gas? Can we afford this? Can we afford $100,000 or $500,000 to bring in a bunch of overpriced bonus babies to talk about performance-enhancing drugs in front of a congressional committee that's going to do precisely diddly about it? Ah, but I'm crazy. I'm a liberal, sure. Let's go to the phones. Jim's with us, and he's been waiting. Hey, Jim, you're head on.
Howdy, 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 ho.
Heady, 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 hey.
How you doing, Bob?
Yeah, I'm all right.
Well, you know, it's just amazing that with all the problems that are confronting this country and all of the problems that they're having in the two in the House of Representatives with Mr. DeLay and his crowd, that they have to waste our tax money in dealing with a problem that should be handled by the baseball commission.
Well, if we had a baseball commissioner, I mean, Bud Selig's not exactly a paragon. Kennesaw Mountain Landis, he ain't.
Well, you know, I'll tell you the truth. I could care less what these people do. As far as I'm concerned, most of them are nothing more than high-grade morons, and if they didn't have a sport, their uniform to play, they'd be nothing but common laborers.
Well, let's take it easy on the laborers there, Jim.
But I'm just talking about, you know, sorry about that. I don't mean to sound elitist, but I mean, you know, these people basically would not exactly score very high on an IQ test, but they pay these tremendous salaries, and you know that bothers me.
Oh, it bothers the dickens out of me, Jim. I mean, how much is A-Rod being paid?
I don't know, but, you know, when I see my news filled up with stories about Scott Peterson's first day in San Quentin.
Oh, dear God, did you catch that?
And then there's another one about Bonnie Bedelia and who capped her. And then we go on. It's just like, where are we living? White trash America?
Pretty much. I mean, I saw 15, 20 minutes of coverage on CNN this afternoon of the talking head lady inquiring as to Scott Peterson's living conditions and
what Nancy Grace was it?
No, thank God it wasn't Nancy Grace. No, she's got a new job, Jim. She's out here pimping this Brian Nichols heroin lady. Have you seen, you know, I wondered, you know, all last weekend, I'm glad you mentioned it, all last weekend, it was 24/7 of Nancy Grace and this woman that turned in Brian Nichols, the shooter down in Atlanta, the brown-headed
right,
lady.
Okay.
And I kept thinking, you know, are they just, are we seeing just a little too much of her? I mean, you know, how much do we need to, and then it, you know, all the pieces fell into place because they announced, what, in the last 2 days that she's going to get the reward money, this lady is. And so what CNN was actually doing, you know, I'm not just being dirty mouth, they were pimping her.
Sure they were. Of course they were. And Nancy Grace is one of the biggest, you know, pimps there is.
Oh, it was just shameful.
And, you know, I don't know what her record was when she was a DA. I understand it was questionable. But that has got to be the meanest, most ill-tempered woman I have ever seen in my life.
Harridan comes to mind.
Oh, good Lord. I mean, obviously, you know, hell hath no fury like a woman scorned, but somebody must have really dumped all over her. You know?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, it's just like the news has gotten to be this Chatty Cathy type thing. And, you know, I wish they would, and I hope you read the lyrics of the song.
Yes, I did. Yeah.
And I wish they would just keep their big nose out of our business.
Well,
you know?
I wish they would do their job.
And report things that are, you know, and you know, like trying to make Congress responsible and earn the money they get and trying to get things fair and square up there and trying to, you know, have a government that's respected in the world.
But, Jim, water will seek its own level, and so will a journalist. I mean, I will remember what Mark Twain once said, something to the effect of every editor should have a pimp for a brother-in-law so he could have someone to look up to.
Well, you know, there's one guy that I do enjoy, and I think he does his job pretty well, and that's Anderson Cooper.
Hey, he's not bad. What is he, Gloria Vanderbilt's son?
That's right.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember when he was on, he didn't come on until 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
And I remember one night on the show, obviously somebody had really ticked him off. He had a stack of papers, and he threw them all over the studio and walked out.
I can take Aaron Brown. He's not so bad. But this steady parade of... it's celebrity gossip. It's not news anymore.
I know. It's just like, you know, they ought to call it the Inquirer and the Globe and the Star.
Yeah. I mean, what? Okay, so Bobby Blake got acquitted and Scott Peterson is checking into a cell next door to Richard Ramirez. Okay, fine. That's a 20-second reader. Move on. You know, tell me, you know, journalism should be doing its job. You know, give me 20 minutes on the dirty shenanigans of bug spray delay.
Yeah, really.
Ain't going to happen.
I mean, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I think bug spray delay ought to be in right next to Scott Peterson, and they could talk to each other by tapping on the walls using the quadratic alphabet.
Well, I don't know. When I think about bug spray delay, I think about Devil's Island.
It would be nice, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it
would. And without any bug spray, and they could just have their way with him.
Yeah, but he's probably naturally immune by now. He's been huffing it for so long, Jim.
My God in heaven. But anyway, you know, it is just, you know, truly, the empire has been brought low and the captains and kings have departed in this country. I mean, we are just becoming a nation of white trash. And I don't mean that to sound, well, as bad as it sounds, but... But when you listen to, now this afternoon, and I realize the sands of time here are running quickly.
That's okay.
I did listen to Michael the Wiener Savage.
Right.
Did you hear him this afternoon?
I heard him this afternoon and last night. It was the same show.
Oh, God.
And, yeah, I heard him having the fit about the doctor who was having the sex change operation. Did you catch that part?
I did. That's all he talks about.
Yeah, and this, what?
I mean, why? It, you know, when Walter Carlos, the electronic guy, became Wendy Carlos, it didn't impact the type of music he produced.
No, and, well, I think Renee Richards actually played a little bit better tennis than she did as a guy, but you know, that's neither here nor there.
Well, you know,
it ain't any of my business, Jim.
Didn't she write a book called Tennis Without Balls?
I think she did. Thank you for reminding us.
If these people are so driven in their gender identity that they have to go to a reassignment type of situation, It's not for me to judge them.
No. It's
or comment on.
It's none of my business.
I mean, the very thought of it just kind of makes me wince with pain, but, you know, hey, that's not me. I mean, that's them, not me.
Well, you know, there is a terrible old joke, and I'm going to go ahead and get the women in the audience mad at me, but I got to tell it.
Oh, God.
There was a post-op transsexual being interviewed on a radio program, and they asked her if the reassignment surgery was painful. She said, no, I was really out for it. And I said, well, you know, obviously, you know, they were snipped off. And did that hurt? No, I was completely anesthetized. They said, well, what was the most painful part of this process? And the transsexual woman said, well, it was when they stuck that hose up my nose and sucked out half my brain.
Oh, my God. That's terrible.
Yeah, it is, and I apologize for it already.
That's terrible. You're going to bring down the wrath of every female in Raleigh County.
Oh, but I say that in humor. It's a joke. You know, don't get mad.
But, you know, and one other thing I did hear on the local news, and I only heard part of it, but apparently some very sick, perverted...
Oh, the dog thing?
Now, Bob, a person like that, I could take my Beretta and I could just use them for target practice. I wouldn't even think twice about it.
And that's after the pistol whipping. I know, that's just sick. Just
what in
sick.
The name of God Almighty could possess an individual to do something like that?
Well, didn't it smell like it had some? Didn't it smell kind of revenge based the way they did it with put it in the car with the duct tape and the? I mean, didn't it? That's,
obviously, they used someone's beloved pet as a weapon against that person.
Well, you know, we're still not over the schnauzer that we lost Jim, who got antifreeze. You know, they're just some really rotten, mean people out there.
They really are. I mean, they make Jimmy Gandolfini and Michael Imperioli and their roles in The Sopranos look like angels.
Yeah, those are class acts. I mean, you know,
Uncle Junior.
Yeah, Uncle Junior. Yeah, it's only business. Hey, Jim, we do have to roll.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, man.
All right.
Later. Okay, get your 2 cents worth in. I apologize, ladies. Please, that was just a joke. It just reminded me of it, but please. This is News Talk 620 WWNR. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. Why did I tell that?
Head On.
Good evening. This is Carl Mack, WWNR News. Senator Rockefeller says he will fight proposed cuts in the Essential Air Service program. The West Virginia Democrat says the president's plan to cut funding from the program would devastate commercial air service at small rural community airports like those in Beckley and Lewisburg. The Bush plan calls for $52 million in cuts to the program, and would require the Raleigh County Memorial Airport to come up with more than $250,000 matching funds to get its share of $2 million in federal money. And that's something airport manager Tom Cochran says is nearly impossible. Rockefeller says he's written a letter to the Budget Committee asking them to fund the Essential Air Service program at last year's level of $102 million. A Kanawha County senator wants couples to wait before they divorce. Steve Harrison has introduced a bill that would allow couples about to marry to enter into a covenant agreeing to wait 2 years before filing for divorce and seeking premarital and pre-divorce custody. The bill is modeled after similar laws in Louisiana and Arkansas. Governor Manchin wants some investment powers restored to the state treasurer's office. Lawmakers stripped those powers after a 1987 scandal that involved Manchin's late uncle, then Treasurer A. James Manchin. Legislation introduced today at the governor's request would transfer the state's consolidated fund from the Investment Management Board to a new Board of Treasury Investments on July 1st. Senator Byrd lost his effort yesterday to increase federal subsidies for the beleaguered Amtrak system. Byrd sought to give Amtrak more than $1 billion operating funds for the federal fiscal year beginning October 1st. It failed on a 52-46 vote. The amendment was co-sponsored by 23 senators, mostly Democrats, two Republican senators from the Northeast, Arlen Specter of Pennsylvania, and Lincoln Chaffee of Rhode Island, also voted for.
the amendment.
The rest of the evening, partly cloudy with temperatures tonight near 27, but tomorrow sunny and nice. Get out and enjoy 52 degrees tomorrow. Unfortunately, cloudy Saturday with rain again by afternoon, but Saturday's high near 50. For News Talk 620, this is Carl Mack, when you need to know.
WWNR Beckley.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
The seven-year struggle by SEIU 1199 to organize Yale New Haven Hospital's 1,800 service workers has heated up in recent months. Both sides claim to support the right of workers to organize and have been trading salvos on local television and in newspapers. Melinda Tuhus reports from New Haven.
More than half of the hospital's nurses, aides, housekeepers, custodians, and secretaries have signed a union card, and the hospital says it supports their right to unionize, according to spokesman Vin Petrini.
We support their rights to do that through the National Labor Relations Board.
Lance Compa did a study for Human Rights Watch that he says shows definitively that the NLRB is stacked against workers.
It's really become a tool for frustrating workers' organizing rights instead of empowering workers to make their own decisions.
The NLRB has cited the hospital four times for unfair labor practices, but has required the hospital to do nothing more than post a notice saying it will notice not repeat the violations. Tawana Marks has been working at Yale New Haven Hospital for 14 years and is active in the union drive. She says it's discouraging working beside Yale University employees doing the same job and explains why she wants a union.
I think that a union coming in the hospital will actually give us a voice, give us some sense of feeling like we actually belong versus just employees who are just here to do a job with nothing else to say.
For WIN, I'm Melinda Tuhus in New Haven.
The International Association of Machinists says that the Federal Pension Benefits Guarantee Corporation has indicated it's receptive to United Airlines and the union reaching a joint resolution that would avoid the government taking over the pensions of ground workers at United. The machinists and representatives from United, and also from the Pension Benefits Guarantee Corporation, met to discuss this issue. The machinists say they have shared with United Airlines the union's advanced ideas on securing its members' pensions. The union says 8 months after United defaulted on the pension plans, it has yet to seriously consider any alternative other than terminating the pensions. More talks between United and the IAM are set for the week of March 21st.
New Jersey has become the 13th state to raise their state's minimum wage from the federal level. The proposal passed the Assembly Tuesday, raising the wage from $5.15 per hour to $7.15 per hour. The increase also comes barely a week after the U.S. Senate defeated two proposals to raise the national minimum. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Having a odd work shift may not be as odd as it used to be. According to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, nearly a fifth of the workforce hit the time clock outside of the hours between 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. That works out to roughly 24 million Americans, an increase of 11% since 1991 for white-collar workers and 6% for blue-collar. Reasons cited include better pay, spending time with family, and the need to gain experience.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
A man who just loves conservatives, baked, boiled, or fried. Here's Bob Kincaid.
Welcome back. About 20 minutes before 8 o'clock, if you were listening to Carl Mack's news, you heard the story about this brain-dead moronic divorce bill. This is nothing new. That, like I said, the Republicans haven't had an original idea since abolition, and that wasn't theirs either. Steve Harrison, the Kanawha County Senator, is introducing covenant marriage. Now, they made a big to-do about it on what passes for news a few weeks ago when that clown that's governor of Arkansas, Mike Huckleberry, half of Mike Huckabee, whatever he is, started pushing covenant marriage to make people wait in a miserable marriage 2 years before they can divorce. Life is short. Occasionally it's sweet. I tend to ascribe to the philosophy espoused in the title of that one wonderful poem by Robert Frost that says, happiness makes up in height for what it lacks in length. And if you're in a rotten marriage, And, you know, hindsight's 20/20 at best. If you got yourself into a rotten marriage, why do we want to ask people to stay in them longer than they have to? Shouldn't... Yeah. Well, we're sorry the hubby's beating the snot out of you. But why don't you stick around for a couple of years and see if he lightens up a little bit? And, you know, it does go both ways. You know, gee, mister, we're sorry that all she ever does is scream at you. But why don't you stick around for a couple of more years? I mean, you know, it's just life. I mean, you'll get your reward in heaven later. Stick around in a bad marriage. You'll enjoy it. Talk it out. There's no... Oh, my God. So, you know, Louisiana, Arkansas, in other words, you know, brain-dead states, have these laws. Sometimes I regret the things I say on this show. Things like, you know, I wonder when that one's going to, you know, when some Republican genius is going to pick up that one. Well, apparently Kanawha County Senator Steve Harrison's picked it up. Let's see. Let me see if I've got this straight. We've got a pension issue to worry about. People like Mr. Harrison would like to take away your constitutional rights to sue an insurance company. And God knows what's happened to the tongue-splitting bill. But Steve Harrison apparently has way too much time on his hands, so he's introducing covenant merge. Oh, for... Sometimes things are so dumb, it's almost difficult to comment on them. You know, I'd have to get down to the level, you know, speak in, like, two-letter words, single-syllable words to... Oh. And, you know, Harrison says those who agree to the covenant would go into marriage better prepared with premarital counseling. Really? And your basis for asserting this? Ah, how about the fact that he believes it? Oh, ding, ding, ding. We're back in Tinkerbell land again. Thanks, Senator Harrison. We're back into what we believe. You know, just like this idiot Overington, he believes that bringing the death penalty back to West Virginia would reduce crime in this state when every single study that's ever been done about it suggests that states with the death penalty have higher murder rates than the states without it. But he believes. He believes. It's faith-based legislation. Oh, my aching back. Let's go to the phones. 252-6200. Outside Beckley, 800-620-9967. Wayne's with us. Hey, Wayne, you're head on.
Hey, Bob.
Yeah.
The Radio Free Beck.
Bingo.
All right, I got the right one. I don't know. I came in the middle of something. What was all that? Advice for Vic Sprouse?
No, this was advice for Steve Harrison.
Oh, okay.
No, wait a minute. Yeah, wait.
Well, he could use that, couldn't he?
Yeah. I wonder if Vic is going to be a co-sponsor here.
Well, I don't know.
You know, maybe
Nick has to start fighting divorce. I mean, it's going to ruin him.
Well, think about it, Wayne. You're right. I'm wrong. We need this bill.
Oh, my God, let me write that down.
No, I'm wrong. We need this bill because Vic needs some covenant marriage, but you know, so he might hang out a couple of extra years till his kid is born.
Yeah, that would be nice. I mean, the man has absolutely no staying power at all.
Well, I know he's been married three times.
Yeah.
Oh, let's not delve into that.
No, let's don't. He needs help.
Well, yeah, I mean, when you're walking out on a pregnant wife, boy, that's some Republican family values, isn't it, Wayne?
Yeah, it is. Let me think.
See you later, honey. I found another bimbo.
Found another one. You know, catch you later. Try to get some money. I dare you. I don't know. You talked about so many things. I want people to start thinking about a couple things. My wife brought this up. Okay. You know, all the people there, the guy on the morning show.
Yeah.
I mean, the airport.
Yeah.
Well, we ought to be able to come up with that money. Blah, 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 blah. Yeah, okay. You know, so we're going to lose that. We're going to lose train service. You know, Senator Byrd tried his, you know, damnedest to save Amtrak here.
Yeah.
You know, he lost by, I don't know, 46 to something. and all that. So they're going to take away the train service, take away the air service, and how much is gas?
210? 209.9, 210 a gallon.
And going up.
Right.
You know, so, okay, yeah. We don't need, you know, we don't need any of these stinking subsidies.
No, no, that's
right.
What is that? That's big government.
Yeah, big government.
But we should be able to, do I understand correctly, we should be able to find the extra $250,000? Is like, what are we, what do I got to stand out on the sidewalk and play guitar with the case open and collect quarters?
Oh, no, but, you know, we have to come up with it. That's what business says, the chamber says, you know, which means we'll get it from the little people.
We'll
get it from the working.
Right, because when the chamber says that, they're not saying, you know, they're not whipping out the checkbook.
Oh, no.
Excuse me.
No, they're figuring out how to whip out your checkbook. That's what they're doing.
Sure.
But,
you know, I mean, how about a temporary countywide sales tax on automobiles costing more than $50,000?
Yeah, a good one. A 15% tax on those.
Bang, airport problem taken care of.
All right. How about, I got a good idea. You know, Blankenship, he likes to buy things.
Yeah.
You know, what's $250,000 to him?
Yeah, hey, maybe he could donate the $250,000, Wayne, for the sake of the kids.
Right. There you go. I was reading in the State Journal today about how that formula goes.
Mm-hmm.
It's something based on how far your little airport is from a major hub.
Right.
So, you know, Greenbrier Valley Airport,
mm-hmm.
You know where that one is?
Yes, I do.
They only have to come up with 10%. So for $5,000, I guess, or no, $50,000, they get $500,000.
Okay.
And I think it's O'Sullivan, a nice guy, I've met him. He's the airport manager down there. He doesn't see any problem at all raising his money. You know who comes into the Greenbrier Airport?
I can only imagine. I'm guessing it's the caviar crowd.
Well, do you know, the Greenbrier County, there's a little hotel down there called the Greenbrier.
Oh, I thought it was the Shady Rest.
That the Republicans come over and take, you know, they take over every year. I think, I don't know, February.
Well, didn't they have a Republican congressional conference there to figure out how to screw us?
Yeah, well, they have one there every year.
Yeah.
And George shows up for 20 or 30 minutes, you know. And then, you know, they expose that they had that bunker there a few years ago and all that jazz.
Right.
They're doing a $40 million renovation down there to store records.
Nice.
Yeah. Leave that one, you know, I got some bridges I want you to look at, too.
Right.
You know, I think, I told you.
They're upgrading the cots. It's going to be a secure, undisclosed location again pretty soon.
You got that. I don't know that it's ever not been.
Probably true.
Well, you know, I mean, think about it.
Yeah.
You know, one of the, how do you hide some of the best? Tell people where it is.
Right. Hide it right under people's noses.
That's exactly right.
But,
now, on another matter.
Yeah, go ahead.
The prevailing wage thing?
Yeah.
And the article in the paper today?
Right.
And the editorial in the paper Monday?
Mm-hmm.
Did you see that editorial in the paper?
No, that one I didn't see.
It was an amazing thing. It was the only editorial they had room for that day.
And,
the only one.
And it came, let me guess, it came out against working people?
Oh, yeah, it was that, and I swore I'd never mention his name, but I'm going
to. No, don't. We know who.
Okay.
That clown. Yeah.
Okay.
The guy that thinks if we just pay the workers a little bit less, he can pocket a little bit
he
more.
He can make more money, yeah.
Right.
He has this hotel up in Beckley.
Yeah.
And all that. There was another article. He appeared before the Senate Labor Committee yesterday.
Right.
On his challenge to the West Virginia prevailing wage.
Mm-hmm.
This person is a liar.
Really?
He lied.
Did he?
Okay. And this
was he under oath?
Huh?
Was he under oath?
No, I don't believe he was.
Ah, damn it. I hate it when that happens.
But if he, well, I don't know. If he's not a liar, he should sue me for libel.
Okay.
Okay. He's a liar.
All right.
He stated in there that the reason that the Department of Labor was after him was because of the wages he paid. That is a lie. He is trying to his whole thing is why he wants to eliminate prevailing wage is because we were, the Department of Labor was after him for the prevailing wage. It's a lie. He had a private project.
Right.
Prevailing wage does not apply to a private.
Well, you know, I read that, Wayne, and I couldn't make two and two equal four on that one.
Okay, the Department of Labor gave him a cease and desist order because he did not have a contractor's license. He argued that he didn't need one because he owned the hotel. He ended up winning that argument.
Really?
You know, yeah, and why, I don't know. You know, the contractor's licensing board, after I don't know how many hearings, agreed with him. Five of the people that were on that board are no longer there.
Okay.
You know, I don't know if that's any kind of coincidence or whatever. But regardless, that's why he was issued a cease and desist order, because you didn't have a contractor's license. He, you know, here's a guy that came from supposedly Atlanta, Georgia, supposedly has had contractor's license in other states before, which I have never been able to find. I asked him on the radio where he had contractor's licenses before. He told me Georgia and Tennessee. And I said, I looked in Georgia, and I didn't find a contractor's license. He said, you don't need a contractor's license in Georgia. I said, you just told me you had one. Oh, no, a business license.
No, the dog ate it.
Yeah, the dog, you know, whatever. The man's a liar. He lied about, you know, prevailing wage had nothing to do with his hotel. Nothing. And he continually said that in this argument. And so here's this guy that came from Atlanta, Georgia, supposedly had licenses. He came to Beckley, West Virginia, and figured that he was going to just fool a bunch of these stupid hillbillies and do whatever he wanted to do. And they had the audacity to ask them to obey the law.
The nerve.
Right.
Yeah.
So now this guy has some vendetta against the Department of Labor, and he's exercising it.
Well,
if he was telling the truth, I wouldn't have any problem with him, but he's lying.
Well, I don't want to make this unpleasant or uncomfortable or anything, but what is Ron Thompson doing in bed with Linda Sumner and John Overington?
Because Ron Thompson is a Republican. So are Linda Sumner's and Senator Overington. Is it Senator?
Delegate.
Huh?
Delegate Overington.
Delegate. They're all Republicans. I called Ron Thompson's office today and simply left a message, my name and my phone number, and said I would have more respect for you if you admitted that you were a Republican and changed your party affiliation.
Yeah.
You know, because Democrats don't advocate right to work, which Ron Thompson does.
Right.
And they don't fight to take the prevailing wage away from.
Well, backing up to the guy from Atlanta, this is exactly what the paragraph says.
Okay.
Got it in front of me.
Okay.
He termed it harassment. Okay. An Atlanta developer whose renovation work in Beckley was halted by the Division of Labor. He termed it harassment, saying the Division of Labor put his President Hotel project in Beckley on ice for a year with cease and desist orders over the wage.
That is a lie. Mr. Mitchell is a liar.
Okay, so, I want to be very clear about this. Have you researched this?
Yes.
Okay, so he was ordered to cease and desist because there was a legal theory that said
he should have a contractor's license. You see, one of the things, if you know the law, which there's a guy that calls your show that thinks he knows the law, but the reason he thinks he knows the labor law is because he called the guy in the morning and asked him, is the prevailing wage an average? And the guy said, yes, it is. So they both believe that.
Okay.
There's nowhere in the prevailing wage law or the determination of the prevailing wage is the word average mentioned.
Well, obviously you've read it. What does it say?
I'm not here to educate these people.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay, look it up.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, these guys are real good with the web and all that. Go on the web and read the law. Then come tell me what it says.
Right.
Educate me. Because, you know,
they don't think I know what I'm talking
about. You're just one of those dumb working people.
Huh?
You're just one of those dumb working people.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's a miracle you manage to get your pants on every morning. I mean,
this, yeah. Right. And you know, it's this theory of eliminate the prevailing wage and everything will be right. You know, it's a simplistic view of, you know, how to solve a problem. And it just shows the ignorance of that they don't have any knowledge of the construction industry or what it's all about. And, you know, it's,
yeah. Well, you know, I think, to be fair to the paper, I think they gave good coverage to Roy Smith's comments.
Yes, they don't. No, they did good. They did good. I have a problem with the only one editorial on Monday.
Yeah.
You know, but Larry...
Martin?
Yes. You know, I was on the board of the Red Cross with Larry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know if I have a good relationship with Larry. When I think he's wrong, I call him up and tell him. I'm trying to think. What was the editorial? Oh, they had that editorial about against these people passing out the pamphlets with that Kerry was going to outlaw the Bible.
Yeah.
They had a very good editorial in there. And I called them up and told them I thought that was good.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I don't get to make as many of those calls.
Well, I think my favorite...
But I try to be fair.
I think my favorite part of this whole article, Mannix Porterfield wrote it, is this guy saying, the Department of Labor has been acting as an extension of labor.
I know. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, that's one to make your eyes roll back in your head.
He said the DOL.
Yeah.
Does he know what that means? D-O-L?
Labor?
It's not dull.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. With him, maybe it's dull. Yeah.
Right.
Oh,
but,
God.
Sometimes I think, maybe this is my fault because I don't talk to people enough about the prevailing wage and, you know, what it's, you know.
Well, I don't know. Maybe people's eyes roll back in their heads when they hear prevailing wage. You know, maybe we need to just start talking about it, Wayne, in terms of obeying the
law. Yeah.
You know, that stuff that they started beating into your head long about 3 years old and brought
when they were bringing officer friendly
to the kindergarten and that kind of stuff.
Right. Yeah, and that's the fight I'm having with Forward Southern West Virginia and Raleigh County Commission. You know, like, I understand you guys don't like the law. You filed complaints against it and all that. This is the United States of America. It's your right to try to change that law. But until you change that law, you have to obey the one that we have now.
Seems
that's
simple enough to
works.
Me.
That's not unreasonable, is it?
No, that's the way, kind of the way I was raised.
Okay.
Just checking.
Because I have to check every now and then, you know, because people call me bad names and stuff.
Well,
and
yeah.
I go, wow, geez, am I really a mean guy?
You kneecapper, you.
Yeah, you, right.
Hey, well,
oh, yeah, thanks. Thug. Yeah,
yeah, thug.
I forgot that part.
All right, brother.
All right, man, have a good one.
See ya.
Bye.
Okay, it's time for ABC News. Where do the hours go? This is News Talk 620 WWNR. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Head On.
Proud of over 50 years of broadcasting history.
You can depend on us.
News Talk 620, WWNR, Beckley. It's 8 o'clock.
It's your second hour in the liberal sandbox, and you're Head On with Bob Kincaid.
Interesting study out after all the yakety yak yesterday about the mercury business. Did they trot Chicken George out to say mercury's good for you? Eat more mercury. See what it done for me? This was sent to me from our good friends at Coal River Mountain Watch. Study comes out today. Came out today in the journal Health and Place. And guess what the findings of that study were? Now pay attention, pro-lifers. Autism, a developmental disorder marked by communication and social interaction problems, increased in Texas counties as mercury emissions rose. You got that? Autism rates increase proportionally to increases in mercury emissions. And it's wait a minute. It's not just because it's Texas. I mean, yes, it's a very strange, strange place, but it's not just because it's Texas. It's because of the mercury. Anybody been paying attention to the increase in developmental disorders even around here? And yeah, the pharmaceutical industry has something to do with it, I'm sure. But we don't always... this study just confirms the fact that we are, we're poisoning our children. Well, I mean, we're not. Don Blankenship is. These coal-fired power plants that pulled the puppet strings on George W. for sale at the right price, they are. And that's mercury. The main finding of the study is that for every 1,000 pounds of environmentally released mercury, we saw a 17% increase in autism rates. This, according to Claudia Miller, a family and community medicine professor at the University of Texas Health Science Center in San Antonio. Now, remember, 17% increase in autism rates for every 1,000 pounds of environmentally released mercury. Here's the sit-down part. About 1,000 tons of mercury are released into the air annually in the United States from hundreds of coal-burning power plants. So, coal, it keeps the lights on in the autism unit of the Children's Hospital. How do you feel about that, West Virginia? You know, sometimes we jokingly refer to our lovely state as West by God, Virginia. Now, this is a little bit of an obscure reference, but maybe it's West by Borgia, Virginia. You remember Lucretia Borgia? She was a poisoner. Look what we're doing. Look what we're doing. Poisoning our fellow Americans. And I'm sure they're grateful. The study shows that there may be a very important connection between environmental exposure to mercury and the development of autism. Some people believe, some studies indicate that there are 1.5 million people in the United States with autism. Most of them are children, and the rate is rising in recent years. Because mercury doesn't go anywhere. It's not like you eat some mercury and then the mercury's gone. Or you breathe in some mercury, or you swallow some mercury, and then the mercury's gone. The stuff can it can seep into through your skin. Your skin is what's called a semi-permeable membrane. And yet mercury has the miraculous ability to seep through your skin. And it's a real brain rotter. And yet, clamping down on mercury emissions would put... Don Blankenship out of business. And he'd probably have to go to his grave with only one U-Haul following his hearse instead of two. Not that it'll do any good. See, mercury emission is supposed to be ended or cut by 50% in the next 15 years, according to the Bush administration. 15 years. And even then, what are the energy needs going to be? They'll be more than they are now. So 50% in 15 years is probably... by the time you get done with the weasel words in the regulatory scheme, it'll probably be no reduction at all. I don't like this. This is sick stuff. And, of course, you know that they've got these credits. They can trade credits. In other words, if there's a power plant out there that's not producing so much mercury, then the something like the John Amos plant down in the Kanawha Valley that just belches mercury into the air, well, they can trade credits and keep on belching the mercury as long as the other little plant doesn't. Somehow I can't, I'm guessing that's not good for us. Well, maybe we need to change the name of autism. Maybe we need to change autism to Bush syndrome. Thanks, George. And you do remember, don't you? Because so much of this is so easy to forget. You do remember, don't you, that we come in peace, and sound like Captain Kirk. You do remember, don't you, that when he was on the campaign trail in the year 2000, he promised he would cut CO2 emissions, and then he reneged on that promise. So are you surprised to find out that his cronies have come up with a way to allegedly reduce mercury emissions and actually not do so? It reminds me of the line from, what was it, Brown versus Board of Education, that instructed the states to comply with integration, quote, with all deliberate speed, unquote. Sounds really good, doesn't it? With all deliberate speed. Although if you bother to read the dictionary of definition of deliberate, it means slow, not hasty, not in any hurry. It's the same thing. Same thing. Cut those mercury emissions by 50% in 15 years. Gotcha, boss. And so, well, you see how it works. Watch the birdie. Find the queen. Which shell has the pea under it? Here's the secret. There's no pea, there's no queen, and the birdie is stuffed. It's all a con. And we are, well, we're the marks. We're the rubes. You and me, our kids. It's refreshing, isn't it? No, it's not. It's sickening. It's heartbreaking. Again, just curious. Where are the pro-lifers? Could I have a pro-lifer call on this issue? Yeah, probably scared too. Because mercury's good for you. Look what it did for George. Dear God. Okay, break time. When we come back, your phone calls at 252-6200 outside Beckley, 800-620-9967. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
How tough are you? West Virginia Sports Promotions presents the 26th Annual Southern West Virginia Budweiser Original Tough Man Contest, as seen on TV. This exciting event is being co-sponsored by 84 Lumber, Hometown Subaru, and Charter Media. It's coming April 1st and 2nd to Beckley's Raleigh County Armory. Up to $5,000 in prize money and Tough Man jackets to be awarded, plus an opportunity to advance to the World Championships and fight on national TV. No entry fee. Divisions for men and women. To sign up, you must be 18 or older, an area resident, no pro fights, and limited amateur experience. Just tough local guys and gals. If you think you're tough enough, call 1-800-296-3897. That's 1-800-296-3897. It's the 26th Annual Southern West Virginia Budweiser Original Tough Man Contest, as seen on TV. Coming April 1st and 2nd to Beckley's Raleigh County Armory. Tickets go on sale March 12th. Tough men, tough women, and ring girls, sign up now. Wimps need not apply.
Hi, this is Eric Stafford, pastor of Worship and Arts Ministries at Family Worship Center, located at 224 Pinewood Drive in Beckley. This Good Friday, March 25th, and Saturday, March 26th, our Worship and Arts Ministries will present the third annual presentation of Behold Him. This year, we present the wonderful story of Jesus told through the eyes of Simon Peter. You will not want to miss this dramatic musical presentation with choir, a full cast, new sets, animals, and much more. Come be a part of this visual dramatic experience. Tickets are available by calling 252-8474 or by coming by the church office Monday through Thursday. Tickets can also be obtained at our Sunday morning services, which begin at 10 a.m. Doors will open to ticketed guests at 6 p.m. and to non-ticketed guests at 6:30 p.m. So be sure and get your tickets for the best available seating. Come and celebrate the victory that is Jesus and behold Him. Good Friday, March 25th and Saturday, March 26th at the Church of God Family Worship Center.
West Virginia's only live nighttime talker, Bob Kincaid.
Welcome back, 17 after 8. And to the phones. Jeff is with us. Hey, Jeff, you're head on.
Hello. How you doing now?
I'm doing great.
Man, you sound mad tonight.
I'm not mad. I'm as calm as a cucumber. I'm just downright calm. If I got upset, I probably wouldn't even be capable of taking up knitting.
Well, you don't look at the bright side enough. And, you know, see, look at now. $2 a gallon seems like a good deal.
It's
$2.19, really.
Yeah.
Did you see on the way in?
No.
Yeah, it went up another dime. Thursday's raise it up day.
Is that what it is?
It's what it is.
Okay, so
they can raise it up any day.
See,
I was all excited
about stopping for my brisket tonight, Jeff.
See, yeah. Now $2 sounds like a really good deal.
Sure,
we
it does.
Complained
and,
about
and you know that at getting $1.89 a gallon, that's giving it away.
Yeah, I used to think that $1.89 was ridiculous.
Well, and again, I wasn't driving yet, but I was very conscious of it when we had the first oil crisis, or maybe it was the second one, and gasoline went up to 55 cents a gallon.
I can remember getting it for 87 cents a gallon 5 or 6 years ago.
But it went from like 30 cents a gallon to 55 cents a gallon overnight, and I, you know, we were going to go find us an oil executive somewhere.
Republicans haven't had a good idea since abolition?
That's about the size of it.
Is abolition and civil rights the same thing?
No, abolition is the elimination of slavery, and that wasn't even their idea.
Well, they had, we done civil rights since then.
That wasn't a Republican idea.
It wasn't.
No, sorry.
Oh, did Byrd break party?
No.
Would the Byrd not filibustered or not?
No.
He filibustered it for 14 hours. He broke ranks with his party if Democrats pushed it. Unless he filibustered his own bill.
The Civil Rights Act of 1964.
Yes.
Okay.
The one that Byrd and Gore Sr., Al Gore's daddy.
Right. Both of whom repented their stances, while Strom Thurmond and Lester Maddox and, the rest of the Republicans. Well, you know, you got to understand your history, Jeff. Here's what happened when the Civil Rights Movement
came along.
That
wasn't that long ago, Bob.
1964.
I mean, we talk about Prescott Bush like it was just yesterday, but we can't talk about this?
Sure we can. I'll be happy to talk about it. And I'll be happy to explain to you,
okay.
Jeff,
okay.
that what happened is when the Civil Rights Movement came along, once upon a time there used to be this creature called a Northern Liberal Republican. Okay, and some Northern liberal Republicans got on board with Northern Democrats and pushed through civil rights legislation. Meanwhile, Southern Democrats left the party in large part, and they became the modern Republican Party. Okay, now others stayed in the party and realized how wrong they were. That's people and repented of their stances. That's people like maybe William Fulbright of Arkansas, Senator Byrd. I'm trying to think of a couple of others, but anyway, they repented. And
I think Strom was against it, wasn't he?
He absolutely was, and he left the Democratic Party over it in 1948.
Speaking of Byrd, he had a secret admirer, but she's out of the closet now.
What are you talking about?
Barbara Boxer called him the love of her life yesterday at MoveOn.org's rally for fair judges.
Cool.
She said while explaining that, she said, like Byrd, that I once opposed filibustering judicial nominations back when my party was in control.
Right.
So now they're for him, but they used to be opposed to him.
Well, right, but you see, try to get this square in your head, Jeff. The Democrats never tried to take away the Republicans' right to filibuster.
Well, what does opposing it mean?
It means trying to find a way to break it. You know, you can break. Do you ever play tennis?
Mm-hmm.
You know how to
break the serve.
You know how to break the serve. You can break a filibuster too. Okay. So you try to break the filibuster.
Well,
you don't try to change the fundamental rules of the Senate that have been in effect since you know God was a little boy, because you're having a temper tantrum because you can't get some fascist onto the court.
So those rules that have been around since, like you said, time.
Yeah.
Those should really like the Constitution and you know the things that the framers wrote.
Well, no, don't get it in your head that the filibuster is a constitutional issue. It's not.
Well, I mean, I'm just saying.
It's a rule of the Senate.
Going there.
And it has worked very well because one of the things it does, you know, it goes back to what George Washington said about the passions of the House of Representatives being cooled in the Senate.
We should kind of try to follow the Constitution closely.
We are not talking about the Constitution, Jeff. We are talking about the filibuster rule, which is a rule of the Senate, and it is not constitutionally based.
Well, yeah, I'm not talking about the filibuster. I'm just saying if you had the Constitution sitting there, that you should probably follow it, shouldn't you? I mean,
It's the law of the land, Jeff.
Okay.
You should follow the Constitution in terms of... due process or equal rights or I'm thinking of another one. I can't remember.
Yeah, anything.
Yeah, I mean
anything.
Yeah,
you don't have to
like Americans. Specific. Americans need to all be treated the same.
Well, did Republicans didn't filibuster Ruth Bader Ginsburg, did they?
No, they approved her.
Well, Ruth Bader.
Now, on the other hand, Jeff, mm-hmm. You've got to remember. That for something of a ratio of something on the order of for every one of George Bush's judicial appointees,
yes.
And I realize you're not going to get this out of Rush or anybody, but it is a fact.
Yes.
For about every one of George Bush's judicial appointees that has been blocked,
mm-hmm.
And there's only like 20 of them out of hundreds.
Those ain't the biggies, though.
No, they are the biggies. They're federal court judges. They're appeals court judges.
We're talking about Supreme Court justices.
No, we're not talking about Supreme Court justices. George W. Pinhead hasn't nominated any Supreme Court justices.
But they're going to be coming up.
Well, I mean, you know, life is what life is. You know, people die. You know, people like Rehnquist get sick. But anyway, no, no Supreme Court justices have been blocked, Jeff. But to continue on my point, for every justice that has been blocked of George Bush's, the Republican Senate blocked 10, 20 of mm-hmm. Bill Clinton's.
Okay.
And now they're sitting there crying these big crocodile tears, and they're not willing. You know, it was good enough for them to filibuster a bunch of Clinton appointees, but by God, if we try to do it,
they
on
never
outside,
filibustered any of his, did they?
Yes, they did. I just told you they blocked about 20 for every one that has been blocked of Bush.
I'll have to go research that.
Do please. I don't just make this stuff up, Jeff. It's kind of like the federal fish hatchery in White Sulphur Springs tonight.
You said that it. Well, I'm not going there. But anyway, you said we should follow the Constitution. And Ruth Bader Ginsburg has written things like, too strict a jurisprudence of the framers' original intent seems too unworkable, and boldly dynamic interpretation departing radically from the original understanding of the Constitution is sometimes necessary. Now, which is it? Should we follow the Constitution, or should we depart radically from the Constitution? And this is a Clinton judge.
She is talking about interpretation, Jeff. She's not talking about departing from the Constitution. She's talking about departing from traditional interpretations. In other Plessy versus Ferguson was decided along strict constitutional grounds.
Mm-hmm.
You know what Plessy versus Ferguson said?
Plessy versus Ferguson. That is requiring railroad companies to carry passengers and their coaches?
Nope.
To provide equal and separate accommodations?
Separate but equal.
Separate but equal. Well, that's an example.
Yeah,
separate but equal.
Separate but equal. Now, in order to get away, and that's just evil. Okay.
I had to dig deep in the memory banks for
that's
that.
Just,
sorry, Bob.
Yeah, that's all right. That's just evil, Jeff. So you've got to radically depart from the stare decisis of Plessy versus Ferguson in order to get to Brown versus Board of Education.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe in that sense Justice Ginsburg is quite correct.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, you know, you've got these so-called strict constructionists like Fat Tony Scalia and Slappy Thomas, who believe that if it doesn't occur in the 5,000 words of the Constitution, it doesn't exist in the real world.
Well, do you think that we should be going overseas and looking at rulings that other countries have made when deciding what we ought to do here?
That's the very nature of the Anglo-American jurisprudential system, Jeff. Is we look to see how other people have treated the problem, and by looking at their learning, we therefore try to avoid their mistakes.
But remember when we talk about, like, putting democracy in Iraq, we say, gosh, these people haven't had this for never. They don't understand that. Maybe we're different than other people in other countries. Maybe their rules and their things don't apply to us just the same as a liberal would say democracy.
I think you're absolutely right, Jeff, because among other things, we ruled and we wrote the rules. The United States did. We wrote the rules in the late 1940s at the Nuremberg trials, and we said that claiming I was just following orders was not a defense to war crimes.
That's right.
Okay, but now we've declared that that doesn't apply to us because we're the United States. So, you know, you're absolutely right. We can't be expected to follow our own law.
I don't know that.
Because
that's
we're better. You're absolutely right, Jeff. We're better than everybody else. You know, we are los Estados Unidos. We are les Estados Unidos. We are America, and we're better than everybody else.
Well, I don't know if anybody's saying that, but. It's just, you know.
Sure we are. When you've got Alberto de Torquemada for an attorney general, and he writes opinions that say if it doesn't cause organ failure or death, it's not torture. You know what? The rest of the world doesn't believe that. Well, but we are better than the rest of the world, so we can bastinado people. Well, we can do anything. We can waterboard them. We can stick broom handles up their behinds. We can do anything to them because we are los Estados Unidos. We are les Estados Unidos. We are America.
That was pretty good.
Jeff, we're out of here, man. We're out of time.
Hey,
thanks so much.
Pushing the boundaries.
Yeah, all right. See
you.
Bye now. Okay. Time for a little break, then we'll come back, and more of your phone calls to 252-6200 outside Beckley, 800-620-9967. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Good evening, this is Carl Mack, WWNR News. Members of the Fayette County Commission met with a judge, magistrate, and elected officials Wednesday to explore ways to save regional jail expenses. Commission President Matt Wender says regional jail costs are threatening to overwhelm the county's budget. He suggested a community corrections program could help save money. Circuit Judge John Hatcher said the county was already behind for the requirements of the program and said the current way of handling inmates who come to the courthouse on work release is a disaster waiting to happen. He says inmates on cleanup projects currently are not supervised and also have full access to the maintenance shop with all of its tools. Judge Hatcher said any community corrections program would need lots of pre-planning and thought. Inmates would have to report to a secure location, and there are needs for education and drug, alcohol, and gambling counseling. Sheriff Bill Laird, who also attended the meeting, said regional jail costs are a statewide problem, not just in Fayette County. West Virginia's first lottery jackpot winner is about to collect the last of 20 payments on the $3.74 million he won on March 20th in 1986. Russell Husk was 24 at the time and a maintenance worker at a Parkersburg steakhouse when he won by spinning a jackpot wheel on a weekly lottery TV show. Contestants were chosen randomly from among people who won $100 on instant tickets. Husk's payments were about $128,000 after taxes. If you had questions about a proposed Shady Spring interchange, people met at a public meeting and workshop this evening in the cafeteria of the Shady Spring Middle School. The meeting was conducted in a workshop fashion. That's the news. Now the forecast for this evening, partly cloudy, low 27 tonight. Tomorrow, sunny and nice with a high near 52. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy, low 35. But then for Saturday, cloudy, a chance of showers by Saturday afternoon, high near 50. And then for Sunday, partly cloudy with a high near 46. For News Talk 620, this is Carl Mack, when you need to know.
WWNR Beckley.
The problem for U.S. presidents who jump on their moral high horse and gallop around the world loudly lecturing other nations' leaders about freedom and democracy is that their presidential practices back here in America are often the exact opposite of what they're preaching to others. George W., our present preacher-in-chief, recently went on a highly publicized moralizing mission to Russia, where he publicly scolded President Putin for imposing anti-democratic measures on that country. Fine, Putin's autocratic tendencies are abominable. But then George got caught up in asserting his own moral purity, declaring, "I'm perfectly comfortable in telling you our country is one that safeguards human rights." Well, yes, Americans certainly have a strong belief in that, and we've been striving for that ideal for two centuries, until Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld and company arrived. They have been energetically pushing America backwards on human rights, ranging from insisting that the White House has a right to torture war prisoners to using federal police and the military to shut out and shut up Americans who protest Bush's policies. Filled with moral piety, however, George continued his democracy lecture, saying, "I live in a country where decisions made by government are wide open." What an absurdly awkward thing for him to say, since Bush and company are notorious for pushing a dangerous new culture of government secrecy in America. They have gone to court again and again to assert executive privilege, insisting that they have the autocratic right to hide all information about their decisions. They also maintain no-fly lists. They have unilaterally suspended the public's use of our right-to-know laws in case after case. They've doubled the number of government documents classified as secret, and they've claimed in several cases that not even Congress or the courts can examine their decisions. This is Jim Hightower saying, of course, even under Bush, America is nowhere near as bad as Putin's Russia. Yet.
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac. The libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what. Support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library. So make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
Back to radio for the rest of us. Head on.
Welcome back. 25 minutes before 9. And let's see. Let's go to the phones. Cherie has been waiting. Hey, Cherie, you're head on.
Good evening, Bob. How are you?
Oh, I'm just dandy.
Well, I heard you wanted a pro-lifer to call, so I figured I'd call in.
Okay.
You know, I'm all for living.
Yeah.
They're just making it real hard to do it.
Ain't that the truth?
You were talking about the mercury emissions.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now there's an obscure draft in legislation called CCOR, State Enhanced Authority for Coastal and Offshore Resources Act of 2005.
Okay.
And basically what the government's wanting to do is to supposedly give the states right to agree to offshore drilling.
Oh, nice.
For oil and gas.
Yeah.
And this little bit of legislation will basically destroy a protective blanket that was from, you know, the east to the west coast and has been in effect since 1982.
Wow.
So they want to just blow it out. And, you know, do they not realize that they're going to end up destroying the entire ecosystem?
Who cares?
Since we have to live here,
No, wait, Cherie. See, you gotta crawl inside the squirrely little mindsets of these neo-Confederates to understand them. people talk about, Newt Gingrich had his conservative revolution. These aren't revolutionaries, Cherie. These are revelationaries.
Yeah,
okay?
Pretty much.
They believe, pollute the earth, do anything to it that you want to. Doesn't really matter about whether your grandkids can live on it, because they're absolutely convinced the earth is not going to be here. It's going to be replaced by some new Jerusalem that's going to come down out of the skies and blah, 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 and it doesn't even exist in the Bible, but they believe it anyway.
Well, I mean, even the Clean Water Act. Okay, it's not clean water. They're wanting to taint. It doesn't matter what goes into your stream. Oh, it's okay, because it's not going to get to you.
Right. You know, and coal, big coal's worried about aluminum in the water, and they're doing their best to convince us that means, it's like if somebody throws a beer can in the creek.
No problem.
No, it's not like that. This is dissolved aluminum. This is aluminum that gets, sucked into fish, and we eat the fish.
Get a little Alzheimer's, yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah. That's the nice thing about Alzheimer's, all the new people you meet every day.
Pretty much.
Oh, God, I did it again.
Well, it's, and George's problem wasn't mercury, it was lead. just a little bit too much paint off the walls.
Yeah, eating the paint chips, and he's got another lead problem, Cherie.
Yeah,
he's lead poisoning Iraq.
Excuse me?
He's lead poisoning Iraq.
Exactly.
One bullet at a time.
Well, lead poisoning, uranium, depleted uranium.
Yeah.
I was watching on C-SPAN this morning. They were talking about the proposed budgets for the military, and it was an interesting watch. The meeting took place yesterday, and they were talking about budget cuts and things of that nature and about medical care. And what amazed me is the sign-up bonus for the Marines was $600 or less.
Really?
$600 or less.
Wow, don't spend it all in one place.
Well, I'm not against the military.
No, but I don't think that'll even buy you a ticket into the halls of Montezuma, will it?
No. No. And the bonuses that they're offering are taxable. And I just don't feel like that our government, and haven't for a long time, is taking care of their troops and their veterans.
Wait, it's taxable?
Yes, it is taxable. Bonuses are taxable.
Oh, that's just precious.
Well, the government's got to take it one way or another.
The George giveth and the George taketh away.
Pretty much. We must submit to the Bonnie King. It's just disturbing, though. You see all of this, but yet they're willing to spend how many millions on the abuses of steroids?
Oh, yeah.
And to take all of your cold medicines off the counter. I understand that these things are dangerous.
Yeah, I'm kind of for that.
But there's more things that are dangerous. Household chemicals are dangerous.
Manganese is dangerous.
Glue is dangerous.
Sure.
I saw supposedly that there's a rise in teenagers huffing household products.
Brother.
I mean, okay, come up with something else. The scare tactics, the...
Wait a minute, I'm gonna step on my own foot here and say, couldn't we please just legalize marijuana?
Well...
I mean, come on.
They're talking about all the things that are bad for you. Well, booze is bad for you if you overdo it. A little bit doesn't hurt.
Fat's bad for you.
A lot is bad.
What I love are the cocktail parties where the hummingbird tongues and lark's vomit canapé set stands around with a martini glass in one hand and a cigarette in the other talking about drug problem.
Well, it's pretty nice, isn't it? Basically, don't do as I do as I say.
Yeah, something on the order of that.
And I just never had this concept of government having to watch over me. My parents are dead and gone. And I thought I was a big enough girl to make decisions for myself, but evidently I'm supposedly not capable of that.
Yeah, and isn't it funny how it was always the Republicans? I mean, to this day you can hear that goofy half a brain junkie Flimball talk about Democrats and big government.
He's never been touched.
Well, no, but we're the big government people, and yet the nanny state is getting bigger by the day under the Republicans?
The man takes OxyContin and lithium. What do you want? You know, he's a fried puppy. He's on loan from God. The last time I heard anybody
margin
say that,
call.
they got Thorazine. Okay? There's problems there. But it's just disturbing that all these things are going through, and the C-Corps deal is being circulated, and they're calling it stealth strategy because they're not explaining to all these people who are supposedly going to have, you know, the states, the people.
Yeah.
They're not telling the people about it.
Well, what do we need to know about? I mean, yeah, we get what we need, Cherie. You know, we get 20 minutes of an interior decorator's bird's eye view of Scott Peterson's death row cell. We get 30 minutes of Bobby Blake. Our own top of the hour news led with the steroid stuff on Capitol Hill.
We're going back to the plastic and the duct tape. You know, am I supposed to seal my house off from all the pollutants and then suffocate in it?
That's about the size of it. Cherie, thanks so much. I appreciate it. We got to roll.
Thank you, Bob. Have a good evening.
All right, you too.
Bye.
Bye. And wasn't that nice? She didn't get after me about the really terrible joke earlier, so I assume I'm forgiven. There I go, assuming. Okay, David's with us. Hey, David, you're head on.
Hello, Bob.
What's going on?
Yes, you were treated graciously by the previous caller. And the previous caller, I am so glad that you finally just decided to get on your hind legs and, you know, push him back, smack him down. You know, he threw up those softball comments, and you would disarm them with facts. And before you could even ask him to please own up to you were wrong on that one, he'd throw up another softball, badly thought out little offering, and then you would push that aside, and well, he was off to something else and off to something else. Well, anyway, finally for the last
like batting minute, practice, David.
Exactly. But I called to talk about the World Bank, but I'm going to leave that alone for a minute. The idea of military bonuses for people that want to serve triggered something this morning between reading and listening to radio. Up until a year ago, a little over a year ago, the military could count on 10,000 active duty service people migrating right over into the Guard or the Reserves or something.
Yeah, but
in the last full year, have you seen the figures or heard the figures for that?
I haven't digested them fully, but
less than 3,000.
Yeah, so that's down by what, 70%?
A precipitous drop, and the expectation is that's going to go down from there. So people that love the military, people that enjoyed the military, people that felt the call as part of the regular Army, the Navy, et cetera, given a chance to be part of the Guard, are saying, nope, I'll see you later. And there's no way to really stem that tide. And in this year, 2005, there are going to be reserve, and I wish I could say it correctly, whether it's reserve or whether it's National Guard, but there are going to be units from one or the other that will go on their third deployment. And typically, I think the law stops it at three deployments. And historically, there's never been anything beyond a third deployment. And those deployments have been stretched from 1 year to longer. They're going to run out of guardsmen and reservists. And there's not any real stampede for people to join the regular service.
No, there's not. And pardon me, but I just had a little chill run up my spine. I think I feel a draft.
You're exactly right, Bob, because two different commentators this morning, one on considered broadcast, mainstream broadcast, and one NPR, and I know all of Wingnuts are going, oh, NPR, there we go again. Both of them said there is really, if we're trying to do at the end of 2005 what we're doing right now, there will be no alternative to a draft because a military leader still in uniform said there are 15 units within the National Guard and within the reserves that are genuinely ready, and I'm sure that's a stretch, that they are acceptably ready to go overseas. There are 15 units. The last one of those will deploy in the late fall. So,
you know, I remember
the barrel. You can see the bottom of the barrel from where we are right now.
Yeah, and it's already been scraped.
Exactly.
And I remember some months back, David, when you referred to the allegory of the farmer who is forced to consume his stores of seed for next year's planting.
The last thing you're going to do, be as hungry as you want, but don't eat your seed.
Guess
and
what?
They were sending units that were designed to train troops. They were sending training units to Iraq.
And we've done it now.
Oh, yes. We've done it. And there is no let-up. And I heard George Bush, real time, today, say in that cracked, weaselly, drug-addled little voice of his, oh, we've got to stay next to the mission. The people here at home are willing to sacrifice because they don't want to see us give up the mission. We've got to keep the good things are happening.
Yeah, like, and you know, in a way, I mean, from my anti-war viewpoint, good things are happening. Italy just backed out of the coalition of the billing.
Of course they did.
Eventually, the United Kingdom will sober up and get out.
My friends in England say that all but the most daring of press outlets are refusing to acknowledge how much trouble Blair is in. There may not need to be a parliamentary election in England. They may storm the palace. But they may, I mean, I'm sorry, those wonderful debates that we see framed by those green leather seats in the Hall of Commons, that may be over soon. Because England is really not at all comfortable with what's going on and what continues to go on. And even after supporting Bush and after all those things, Blair served up softballs for Bush to pat him on the head, and Bush ignored him.
Well, you know, you mentioned hearing Bush today. Part of what he also said was that the coalition of the billing isn't crumbling. And, you know, I guess maybe that was a little bit of Orwellian newspeak. No, it's not crumbling. It has crumbled. You know, I think Morocco's pulled back their monkeys.
Oh, exactly. You know, even right-wing radio is stepping away from it.
Well, sure. Even
right-wing radio is beginning to acknowledge. I listen to Limbaugh at noontime occasionally, just for a laugh and just to see how bad it is. And his slurred words and all the rest of it. Actually, Cherie may have a point. You know, lithium and OxyContin, how could a guy have a bad day with that combination?
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's a gift that keeps on giving. You know, you chew up the OxyContin for the refreshing burst of flavor, and you know, the game's on.
What? Gee whiz, no wonder he's so confident about America. With a combination like that, gee willikers. You know, Hitler might not have killed himself if he'd have been doing that stuff.
Oh, my God. You're right.
Anyway, Mr. Flimbold, over the last two or three days, I've heard him say several times, this business of this McClellan being gay, no. Don't listen to that. There's no need to be concerned. Oh, this business of the coalition breaking apart. Nope. No reason to be concerned. Oh, this business of the American public not being interested in, not wanting the war to be pursued. No. My friends, there is no reason to listen to any of that.
Damn, you do him well.
Well,
we're going to put you on the payroll, David.
Should I thank you for that?
Yeah, I mean, if we're going to put you on the payroll, you know, we can do it. We can do the Flimball update every night, David. But now,
wait a minute. In these formerly nicotine-stained fingers, I have a letter here from some public official that wants to kiss my butt. Oh, no, I better not go there.
But it's that way all over right-wing radio right now, David. I happened to hear on the way home last night and then again today, because he is, after all, the Nazi so nice, we play him twice, Michael the Savage Wiener. I happened to hear him, well, you know, He couldn't talk about the war. He couldn't talk about the budget. He couldn't. He couldn't even get around to talking about Terry Schiavo or anything. And, you know, he couldn't. He couldn't hammer on the ACLU. He spent an entire program talking about a well-respected physician who has decided to have sex reassignment surgery. He spent a whole program on it.
Boy, oh boy, they, geez, they lost their base then.
Well, and
I mean, he's, wait a minute, I'm having a vision. It's Murray Wiener.
Oh, God.
It's Geraldo Savage.
Oh, brother. You know, yeah, it's really interesting because, you know, for a while Savage has been on a kick of hammering on Bush.
Oh, I know. I've heard that in the evenings occasionally, and I go, wait a second, that's your boy. That's the guy you worked so hard to put in office.
Right, and, you know, he's been opening, what are we going to talk about this time? I know what you want. You want 3 more hours of Democrats bad, Republicans good. Well, I just can't do that. You know, he's a pitiful little hypocrite. And I mean, I think you can really see, and Wayne predicted it. You may have heard it at one point. He predicted that, you know, we would see the House of Cards fall. And I tend to agree with him. I think it's happening faster than most of us even anticipated.
And I think it's going to take a very long time for Mr. Bush's blind, deaf, and dumb supporters to admit it, because it's not going to take words or ideas or visions. It will be the bricks of a house them on the head that cause them to realize the whole thing is falling down.
But you mentioned something about the World Bank.
Well, yeah, we've got Wolf Fitz headed toward the presidency of the World Bank, which I find to be the greatest irony, second only to Mr. Bolton going to the UN.
Michael Bolton?
No.
I celebrate his entire catalog.
The other Bolton Fitz.
Yeah,
you know, we wish. Never mind.
The one that said
to say bad things.
The one that's the Michael Bolton, Richard David? I don't remember. But
Grant,
the
one, Oscar, I forget.
Yeah, Clive.
Mr. Bush's Bolton.
Yeah, the one who said that the best thing that could happen to the United Nations would be to have
the top 10 floors go away,
blown off. Yeah.
Well, there's some folks in New York would like an explanation of that, and there's also some nice citizens of the world that would really like Mr. Bolton to explain why he wants the 9/11 syndrome to be acted out all over again against them. You know, it's supposed to be an exchange of ideas and a coming together to solve world problems, as opposed to, well, you know, if you don't disagree with us, we hope you get killed. That's a little harsh.
That's the American way.
Well, the current
No, I mean, seriously, you got to. Do you remember right after 9/11 when? Speaking of transvestites, Ann Coulter, Adam's apple Annie Coulter, Anthrax Coulter, suggested that 9/11 was a real shame, but only because, or maybe it was after the first World Trade Center attack, but only because the building that didn't get blown up, or the building that got blown up, wasn't the headquarters of the New York Times.
Those people, I mean.
And these are your mainstream Republicans, David. These aren't the extreme side of that party. They're killers, from top to bottom. They're murderous, bloodthirsty punks. I mean, I think I said the other night, making Paul Wolfowitz the head of the World Bank was like making the Bela Lugosi the president of the blood bank.
Thank you. And as far as mainstream, the bell curve has shifted, Bob. Think about this for a second. In my home state, one of the Republicans that I will tell any Democrat I am proud to know about because of what he did in a moment of personal terror and sickness and disappointment beyond all belief, Senator Howard Baker stood up to Milhouse Nixon.
Yep.
And I will always, always think well of Howard Baker for that. Now, there's plenty of things I would argue about concerning Mr. Baker, but that one, he finally got to the point where it was America as he knew it, or it was Richard Milhouse Nixon's benefit.
Right.
Well, I personally think Mr. Baker does not want to watch what the Republicans are doing now.
Well, no, and that's the thing. That kind of character is gone from the Republican Party. They have no moral base. They've utterly sold out for corporate greed, for war, for death, for this phony religiosity. You know, I've got a story somewhere in my stack. I'll maybe get to it in a little bit later. But you know that worthless right wing flack you see on Fox from time to time, Cal Thomas.
Oh gosh, do I ever?
He has decided that liberal churches like the ones that the Reverend Jim Wallace, that liberal churches like that are satanic. Not kidding, he said it. Just as Satan tempts to do what seems good, liberal churches promote the doctrine of salvation through works. Funny, I seem to recall a verse, and maybe you do too, from your good Christian upbringing, faith without works is dead.
Or useless, or nothing, or any negative word can be plugged into the end of it.
Yeah.
That Thomas guy, I saw him to explain a neocon point of view. I saw him come on with, what's the fellow from Texas that grew up Baptist that was on PBS?
Jim Lehrer?
No. The guy that just retired.
Oh, Bill Moyers.
I'm sorry?
Bill Moyers.
Thank you. And Moyers was gracious, addressed him as a friend, said they disagreed about almost everything except the time of day, and then they entered into an exchange. And Moyers, in my mind, unnecessarily and inexplicably, was gracious and let Thomas do what he wanted to do and then simply rebutted it without interrupting outright lies. But Thomas is so far off base. So far out in right, deep right, reactionary. Oh, it was horrible.
Well, and I mean, so now, and again, you know, that religious freak in Wisconsin who shot up the congregation last Saturday, that wasn't a Democrat, David.
No.
That was another mainstream Republican.
And I'm sure he could have, within a week of his horrible act, I am sure he could have told you why George Bush was a righteous man, a good man, and why he was aiming us in the right direction.
Oh, God.
And then he went out and shot some people because he disagreed with a sermon.
Right.
And because, quite possibly, whether it was diagnosed or not, there were mental problems. And I think George Bush has mental problems. I don't see him as fully functional.
I have no doubt of it. I read a little bit of that book, Bush on the Couch, and it made perfect sense to me. David, we got to roll. We're at the top of the hour. Thanks so much, though.
Thanks for the chance. I appreciate your work.
It's always a pleasure. Okay, everybody, a little bit of top of the hour news, then back. God only knows what may happen in the third hour of tonight's Thursday night edition of Head On. This is News Talk 620, WWNR, AM, Beckley, West Virginia. This is Head On. You know who I am. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Radio for the real majority. Head On.
Oh, Figura. 5 minutes after 9 o'clock. I'm Bobby Kincaid. And I'm half ashamed of myself. I've not even thought to wish you a happy St. Patrick's Day. Nor, for that matter, have any of ye wished me one. So shame on us both, and a pax on both our houses. But you know, the wearing of the green and the shamrocks and the driving the snakes out of Ireland. What exactly does that mean? Really? It's kind of neat, because we have to remember that when the early Christian church went into pagan lands,
just as they did with Christmas and just as they did with Easter, you know, bunnies laying eggs and things like that. There is a little bit of subversive symbology tucked away in St. Patrick's Day. You know, everyone knows, you know, that this day commemorates St. Patrick driving the snakes out of Ireland. Now, it's worth mentioning that to the best of any biologist or zoologist's or herpetologist's knowledge, there has never, ever, ever been a snake in Ireland. Some guy, that St. Patrick, drove the snakes away from where there weren't no snakes. But, you know, let's at least understand what that means. When you go to the doctor or you see some medical person and they've got that staff with the snakes intertwined around it, it's called a caduceus. It's a Latin word, by the way. That is a pagan symbol. And the snakes that were driven out of Ireland, the snakes are, of course, symbolic for the destruction of the old and native Celtic religion that existed on the Emerald Isle. So that when we talk about St. Patrick driving the snakes out of Ireland, we're talking about the destruction of an indigenous people's religion and the replacement of it with a new set of myths and superstitions. That's what that means. You know, the shamrock. Oh, picora, we've got a shamrock. Oh, look. That's also known as a trefoil. Or a clover, you know, we call it clover. It's a symbol of kingship. And it's a symbol of, well, never mind. You might be interested to know that the word shamrock, don't tell the church. It comes from the Arabic. But we won't tell anybody about that. But you know, even in getting the religion destroyed the old ways, people managed somehow to remember and remind future generations that it was not all gone. So the snakes are the pagans. Do you know what a pagan is? In the pagan, again, you know, 70% of the words that roll out of your mouth come from the Latin language. And pagan, of course, was a term that was used to describe country people. The church called them pagans. They were country, you know, hicks, hillbillies, rubes, who, even as the church grew into its mammoth monolithic form, the old ways were preserved among the country folk, who stayed close to the land and understood the that there had to be harmony among the land and the things that lived on it. So necessarily those country people were deemed bad by the church, especially after the Council of Nicaea. And the word pagan arose to describe those country people who hung on to the ways of their forefathers as their old ways were trod underfoot. So, by all means, happy St. Patrick's Day. All right. But I ain't drinking no green beer. Mm-mm-mm-mm-mm. And I got an email from our friend Gina. She said to give credit where credit's due. She's got to credit George Bush with making it possible for her to see some of the most beautiful sunsets she's ever seen. You understand what that means, don't you? These beautiful multicolored sunsets, you can't have them unless the sky has a lot of pollutants in them. That's the sunlight reflecting off of garbage in the air. So, yeah, she's right. Some of the most vibrant sunsets the world has ever known because of all the garbage that George Bush lets his Borgia cronies, the poisoners, put into the air that your children breathe. Charming, huh? Thanks, Gina. All right, to the phones. Ed is with us. Hey, Ed, you're head on.
Bob?
Yeah.
How are you doing?
I'm doing good.
That sounds all right. I wanted to, I got to be messed up in my head for agreeing with Steve O'Brien.
Oh, no.
And maybe you can straighten me out, or maybe you can verify for once that I'm right, and then maybe he is too. But on this busing, do I understand that right, that it would be let me give you my opinion.
Okay.
I think that repairing and upgrading the schools and leaving them open is better than doing all these new buildings, plus the gas prices going up, and plus the fact that busing these kids for an hour or whatever time it is, they get to school, and it's no wonder they're wore out and disobedient and all the things that's going on by the time this goes through. Now, like I said, I'm worried when I agree with Steve on some things. But
makes you feel like somebody's put something in your coffee.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Drinking loco weed juice. But anyway, am I wrong there?
No, you're not, Ed. You're not wrong at all.
It seems like a big push, and this thing, this new school, it's like I talked to one of my friends. You know, because an alternator and a starter goes out on your car, you don't go take on 4-year payments on a new car when you can fix that one.
Well, you're absolutely right. The quandary that was faced in this state, and you know, we've got a bad case of bandwagon-itis sometimes, Ed. We will jump on any bandwagon that comes down the pike, because we're afraid that if we don't, we're going to be called backwards or hillbillies or something. And 10, 15 years ago, Ed, the bandwagon was school consolidation.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
And so, consequently, we shut down local schools and consolidate them into another one that always seems to be about, you know, another 40 miles away.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a way to generate bond issues. And it was a way to try to stimulate some construction, which, you know, I'm not opposed to. But by the same token, no, I think in the long run, the current theory is that school consolidation was not a good idea. And we started learning things with, you know, like Columbine, that when you take 2,000 kids and cram them all together and nobody knows anybody and everybody lives in this sort of isolated little clique, bad things are going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, it's just not a comfortable situation for the kids at all to tear them apart from their community and their friends and stuff like that. It's just not good, I don't think.
No, but, you know, the problem we face here, Ed, is that while we love the idea of our community schools, and they really did glue communities together. You kill the school, you kill the community.
Uh-huh.
The bad problem with that is it was becoming impossible to finance them. And the one thing you would never hear, and you know, let's face it, this applies to Republicans and Democrats both, Ed, you'll never hear somebody say, raise my property taxes so we can keep the community schools open.
Yeah, well, that's the next step in it, that who's going to pay if this gas goes like it is? Who does those people that is against keeping these schools open, and what is really promoting new schools? Why are we, and I say we because we're involved in it, why are we doing that? Why, I mean, what is the purpose? Just to say, hey, I've got a new building?
Well, in a way, Ed, you're absolutely right. That is why. Because what you do is if you're trying to make your state so-called business-friendly, right? You go out to the business community and you say, golly, you sure would love to locate here because look at all the fine, fancy, new, ultra-modern schools we've built.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow that's supposed to attract, BMW to build vehicles in West Virginia. It makes no sense to me. I mean, I don't think these people are that shallow.
And look at the ultra price. That's a tag that's on it.
Right, and what kind of gets under my skin, Ed, is the fact that I'm a lot more concerned with the quality of the education. It's like, you remember that old hymn, The Little Church in the Wildwood?
Mm-hmm.
You know, most people who grew up, with traditional Protestant religion here in West Virginia, that's one of those hymns that just really strikes a chord for them. Mm-hmm. The church in the Wildwood.
Yeah.
Well, that you know, there's worship that goes on in that church, and there's learning and teaching that goes on in that church that is every bit as good that goes on as anything that goes on in some church with an 8-lane bowling alley, a basketball court, a sauna, and a swimming pool. You know. These monstrous churches that are going that are getting built now, and it's the same thing with schools.
Yeah, and you know they lose focus of what the church is for, and it's becoming a recreational, and you know anything from drinking in the basement to their, I mean it's just out of proportion with what the Bible and what the
right.
teaching ought to be.
And the same thing applies to the schools. I would trade you. A brand spanking new high school with no windows in it and, you know, armed compound kind of thing that they like to build now. I'll trade you a dozen of those for one good school that's filled with all kinds of different classes. You know, physics and calculus and Latin and French and German and art classes and debate and oratory and theater and band and... you know, real English classes and real history classes. That, you know, that to me is education. It's yeah. not in the building. It's in who's in the building.
Well, that leads into my next, what I was going to talk to you about. It's like the VA. You can put $50 million on one of the VA hospitals, and as long as you leave them people that's not a qualified doctor in there, I get it mixed up on whether they're certified or they got another name for some of those doctors they bring in here, and they're practitioners more than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
You can put all the money on the building you want to, but that don't give you a quality of treatment, whether it be education or medical treatment. But I did want to say one thing. The representative from Hawaii and one from Washington put so much heat on and exposure on the Republicans that even the Republicans are stopping this fee that they're trying to put on VA. I watched that at 4 o'clock this morning.
Really?
And they have got them shamed into going the right way. I mean, you know, in one in the House or the Senate one, I forget which one it is, because I was still about half asleep when I was watching it, but at least they know that these veterans are everywhere in every state. And I guess one of the main leaders in the Republican Party come out and is making the same point about that the VA and the veterans that you and I would make. So I'm even if they had to be shamed into something. And then one of my friends in Beckley was just telling me that Alaskan...
the ANWR, the drilling?
Yeah, that it went through by 51-49 or something like that.
Yeah, that was yesterday.
I wasn't aware of that.
And it's you know, what a sickening little ripoff that is, Ed.
Yeah.
You know, this is just about making Georgia's oil buddies some more money.
Yeah.
And because we're not going to get that gas down here. That's going to go to China. We know that.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing that I've got about it. It's going to be, 10 years before the first drop of oil is pumped.
Right.
Now, how is that going to cure our situation? You know, it's so idiotic that to take a chance on destroying that place up there, and then, in addition, not even guaranteed that the oil would come to us.
Right. And frankly, we're not that sure. There is a wide diversity of people and opinions on how much oil is there. Anything from maybe, you know, 6 days worth to 6 weeks worth to 6 months worth to 6 years worth.
Yeah. But as usual, you got the biggest bunch of rhetoric that there is that the Republican Party is putting out because George Bush wants to do that.
Well, all we got to figure out, Ed, is we got to realize they're not going to pump a drop while George Bush is in office, so he doesn't have to take the heat for it.
Yeah. And doesn't George Bush and them still own a bunch of capped oil wells?
Oh, well, I don't know that he does because, you know, he tried to drill for oil in Texas when he first went into business, And he's one of very few people in the history of the world that have drilled for oil in Texas and drilled nothing but dry holes. I mean, that takes some real talent.
You know, it's almost pitiful. There's some people born into disillusionment and failure. And, of course, most of it's his own choice, you know, the stupid stuff he does. But it looks like the people could look around and see what a failure he is. There's no one else as bad as he is except the weatherman that can be wrong 75% of the time and still hold a job.
Well, the sad thing is George Bush is chasing the stop clock. You know, a stop clock's at least right twice a day. He can't even challenge that average. It's pitiful, Ed.
Yep,
but sure. the thing about the Anwar drilling that we got to remember is, you know, we're not going to see a drop of it for 10 years. We don't know how much we're going to see then. And even if we do see it, and here's the linchpin of the whole deal. When we see that oil, we're going to see that oil at $3.50, $4 a gallon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, they admit that it's not going to cure the price of gas. And, you know, I really don't know the answer to, and I don't claim to have the ability to know the answer to the solution to the oil and the gas problem. But it looks to me like that with a nation that has been, and we are a has-been, because if without money you are a nothing and a has-been, and when another nation like China owns one-third of us already, where are we going to? You know, it's just a degrading situation to know that we were number one and that because of one person that we've lost that position because of money.
Yeah. Don't forget stupidity. Stupidity's in there, too.
Yeah. Well, all of those ingredients that relate to stupidity is in there. And then, like I said, you got these guys that come along and tear down, want to give up the airport and want to give up the way that we get around, the very things that constitute growth. You know, if you don't have a way to get around, you know, of course we could, you know, we still got the grapevine if there's any left in the trees. You know, we can swing it in that way, I guess.
Well, you know, I don't understand how you're going to build an infrastructure if you don't have some way for people to get here. You know, whether it's business or tourism, either one.
That's exactly right, Bob.
All right. Well, Ed, I tell you what, I appreciate it.
All right. And we'll talk to you again soon.
Okay, great.
Uh-huh.
Take care now.
All righty. Bye.
That kind of reminds me, Ed was opposed to the gated community over there in Fayetteville. And lo and behold, they're doing it. They're going to do it again. Public hearing Monday. Some character wants to build a gated community near Kanawha Falls, because remember, the beautiful places are for the beautiful people. And it just John Hosh is the guy's name. He's an Atlanta developer. What's the sudden fascination with of Atlanta with us? I live there. I mean, they got the North Georgia Mountains. Go build gated communities in the North Georgia Mountains. Leave us alone. You know, we don't need gated communities for the caviar and hummingbird's tongue crowd. We don't need those. We need good, affordable housing for West Virginians. But I don't know that he wants to build a gated community on 924 acres of land that he owns that overlook the Kanawha River. And he wants to rezone the property from private land conservation to planned residential district. Mr. Hosh apparently also wants another 2,600 acres, and he wants to build little mini palaces on that as well. Remember, development, when it runs wild, is cancer. For those of you who are more mathematically inclined, figure out the meaning of exponential growth. I saw a lecture on it, and it's just mind-boggling. How many of, you know, okay, well, you know, it's just 924 acres plus 2,600 acres. Wow. what happens the next time? I mean, ultimately, is it our goal? I live in Fayette County. Is it our goal in Fayette County to put some sort of $600,000 a pop homes on every proud peak in the county? What did A. James Manchin say one time? Let us purge our proud peaks of these jumbled jungles of junkery. He was talking about open dumps. But I think he may have had an air of the prophet about him. Need to find out more about this. 3 o'clock Monday afternoon, Fayette County Courthouse. Gated community for Kanawha Falls. Lovey, our new address is Kanawha Falls. My God, there's not even decent cell service down there. But we need a gated community. Oh, for heaven's sakes. Listen, more of your phone calls when we come back. The phone number is 252-6200. Outside Beckley, it's 800-620-9967. This is Head On. I'm Bob.
Inspector of Pennsylvania, and Lincoln Chaffee of Rhode Island also voted for the amendment. The rest of the evening, partly cloudy with temperatures tonight near 27, but tomorrow sunny and nice. Get out and enjoy 52 degrees tomorrow. Unfortunately, cloudy Saturday with rain again by afternoon, but Saturday's high near 50. For News Talk 620, this is Carl Mack, when you need to know.
Hi, this is Linda Luger, Executive Director of the United Way of Southern West Virginia. Thanks for the generous support you provided during the United Way Fall 2004 campaign. Did you know that 99 cents of every dollar donated stays right here in Raleigh, Fayette, Nicholas, and Summers County to help the 20 agencies the United Way supports, including the Red Cross, Girl Scouts, Commission on Aging, Women's Resource Center, Fishes and Loaves, and 15 other nonprofit agencies. Your tax-deductible gift helps the many who are unable to help themselves. Please continue to support the United Way of Southern West Virginia. It's a great investment in our community. If you would like additional information, please contact me at 253-2111. That's the United Way of Southern West Virginia, making a lasting impression on our community.
There are three things you get at L&S Toyota. Great prices, big selection, no hassles. Now here's the specials of the week. L&S Toyota has brand new 2005 Corollas, over 35 to choose for as low as $13,818, including a $500 factory rebate. Buy a brand new 2005 Camry, over 25 to choose for as low as $17,585, including a $750 factory rebate. Plus, buy Toyota certified pre-owned vehicles with 3.99 APR financing for 48 months, a 6-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, roadside assistance, and a 160-point quality assurance inspection. The specials of the week at L&S Toyota, 300 Rural Acres Drive in Beckley. 05 Corollas, $13,818. 05 Camry, $17,585. Offers on select models with approved credit. Prices plus tax, tag, and registration fees. Dealer retains rebates and incentives. Example, 2001 Solara, $270 per month for 48 months at 3.99% financing with zero down. Offer ends 3/31/05.
WWNR Beckley. Hi, I'm Warren Eckstein with today's pet tip. According to the Center for Disease Control, 2 to 3 million dog bites occur each year, and children make up about 60% of those dog bites. Are the dogs to blame? My answer is no, but children need to know how to react around dogs. First of all, teach your kids not to make any fast, jerky motions. Avoid running past a dog or turning your back on a dog and running away. Try to teach your kids to act unconcerned. Most dogs will only sniff you, decide you aren't a threat, and walk away. Don't stare directly into a dog's eyes. Instead, in a loud and low voice, tell the dog, go home. If the dog looks like he's going to bite you, place your bicycle between you and the dog. Hop on a car hood or climb a large tree. If the dog goes to bite, feed him your jacket or school book and walk the other way. If all else fails, teach your kids to lie down, face down, cover their head and their hands, and that should help. Never pet a dog without asking the owner if it's okay first, and never go up to a strange dog. You know, these common sense rules really can prevent dog bites from taking place, and after all, what better relationship than kids and dogs? I'm Warren Eckstein.
If you're like most people, you're sick and tired of your bathroom scale dictating your mood. If you're down a pound, great day. But watch out if you're up a pound or two, or your clothes are a bit tighter. This is not a good day. If this sounds like you, then step off the scale and into the Cortislim lifestyle. You know Cortislim people. You run into those Cortislim show-offs constantly. You hear how great and physically fit they feel, and how they're going new clothes shopping after work. Well, Cortislim people have learned that at least part of their weight issues is related to stress and hormones. Cortislim people don't drive themselves nuts because they've learned the balance of exercise, nutrition, diet, and supplementation. Join me. Step off the scale and into the Cortislim lifestyle. Call now and get $20 off when you purchase two bottles of Cortislim. $20 off two bottles. That's huge. Call 1-800-LEAN-313. 1-800-LEAN-313. 1-800-LEAN-313.
Welcome to the John Deere Lawn Care Show, Green and Growing. Today we're here with Bill Clutho, John Deere's groundskeeping guru. Bill, I am so ready for spring. I'm already thinking about new equipment. When will my local dealer replace snow blowers with string trimmers?
Probably already has. Manufacturers typically introduce new products in the fall, and they start arriving in dealer showrooms in early winter. So take advantage. Go check out the newest technology and designs.
Good idea. I've had my eye on this new lawnmower.
Well, before you blindly follow that eye, make sure it's a match for your lawn's size and contour. For lawns less than a third of an acre, a walk-behind mower can get the job done in about an hour. If you've got more than a half acre, though, a riding lawnmower or lawn tractor is the way to go. And when you go to the dealership, don't be afraid to ask questions.
How about color?
I always like green myself.
I bet you do, Bill.
Matches my lawn, you know.
Mm-hmm. Tune in again for Green and Growing.
A guy who's in no rush to be savage, Bob Kincaid.
Welcome back. Oh, I'm just pulling myself this evening. Telling, you know, the how to care for your pets feature we run. I was just astonished. I heard it on the way in, talking about filing your bird's beak down. I didn't know you could. It never occurred to me to file a bird's beak down. Out in nature, are there little rat tail files hung on the trees? It's a genetic anomaly. I don't know. But the part about don't let the bird eat out of your mouth. Now, I mean, you know, I'm all pro-animal and everything, but ain't no bird eating out of my mouth. Come here, Polly. You want a cracker? Ugh. A little email. Email from Greg. He says, money breeds money, and don't give me your urban sprawl bug spray. Without the rich, there are no poor. What is wrong with home building? It promotes jobs. It does promote jobs. In some instances, it even promotes good jobs. I got to admit, I would be more inclined toward this deal down at Kanawha Falls. But, you know, I know the geography down. Where is he going to put the houses? I mean, there's a river, there's a road, and then it's straight up. I mean, we have learned a lesson from the California mudslides, right? I mean, no, I understand. And if there was, if these guys came in and looked at, and struck a deal with the with union building tradesmen, I would be more inclined to like it, because I would know then that there was going to be some sensitivity to the geography itself. Because we all know that, and it's true, you know, union workers work smarter, they work safer, and they work better. But, you know, I'm sorry, this guy's coming here from one of those right-to-starve states, and he's probably going to bring his illegals with him. Maybe I'm wrong. I'm willing to be wrong. But there's one point in here that without the rich, there are no poor. I guess this is one of those chicken or the egg kind of debates. I see it the other way around. Without the poor, there can't be any rich, because that's how they get that way. Because of poor or poorer people than them who work for them. You know, that's why I support an increase in the minimum wage, because it's good, you know, it's good for the people above them. You know, the Republicans are constantly saying, I can't increase the minimum wage, that'll price people out of the market. Well, that only assumes that they were in the market in the first place, and secondly, there's not a shred of proof to support it. I mean, that was what they said when the minimum wage was first introduced, and I mean, there were people that predicted the economy would crash as a result of the minimum wage when it was first introduced. It didn't. I am concerned with sprawl. We don't have a whole lot of land to build on. And if you overreach carrying capacity, bad things happen. Seriously, did you see the houses built on the hillsides in California? They were beautiful. They were stunning architectural creations. And then the rains came and they went and slid about 100 feet. You know, it sucks to wake up in the morning and your neighbor's in the ground pool is in your bedroom. And I don't know. I'm afraid that might be. But again, I'm operating without all the facts. I admit it. I'll tell you when I'm doing that. The phone number is 252-6200. Outside Beckley, it's 800-620-9967. And yes, in answer to another part of Greg's email, I have had my fair share of green beer. There's something disturbing about it. I don't know. Maybe it's part of the growing up process. Let's go back to the phones. Jeff's been waiting. Hey, Jeff, you're head on.
Hello, Bob.
Hey.
How you doing now?
I'm getting sad now because the show's getting close to being over.
I heard what the Tennessee liberal said. He's so out of place in red state Tennessee, he's got to call across two state borders to find somebody that find another group of people that share his beliefs.
God bless West Virginia that we still got plenty of those people.
But, you know, he can hear...
You seem to forget, Jeff, that he straightened you up when once upon a time when you were busy being dead wrong about how remember the tax giveaways to bring industry to a state. Remember when he straightened you up on that?
No, because I can show you tax.
So rate, you don't tax, remember that?
He was wrong.
No, he wasn't.
I can show you tax incentives that were proposed in Charleston to get that Saturn plant here. They sure were. It didn't work. We tried to get it.
Right,
they
because
just
they knew
outbought
they,
us.
No, they knew where they were going to build that from day one, Jeff.
Well, if you know what they knew, if you can get inside a GM's head. But anyway, you know, I say something and then you go over it and they go, yeah, 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 yeah. But we're about the facts on this show. And the facts are that in that Civil Rights Bill of 64, 82% of the Republicans voted for that, while only 69% of the Democrats did.
Because of what I explained to you.
All the Southern Democratic senators voted against it.
That's absolutely right. That's absolutely right.
80% of the Republicans voted for it.
Right.
Versus only 61%.
Right. And
101 Southern Democrats voted against it.
As I explained to you, Jeff.
But you're trying to make it a spin like...
Those were the conservative element, the racist element of my party, and in large part they're gone now. Yes,
no.
They were.
They weren't conservative.
That's why they went to the Republican Party. That's why your party is filthy with racists now. That's why there's only four Southern the Democrat senators left because the racist Republican right has you obviously know nothing about Richard Nixon's Southern strategy.
You're saying
of scare Whitey to death.
You're saying that the even though Republicans got praised by Lyndon Johnson for their overwhelming support of this bill on the day as he sat down to sign that.
Yes.
President Johnson praised the Republicans. Okay.
Right,
having
because
said that,
remember, Jeff, do please remember, like I said, all
you're
of this.
Put a spin to it,
no,
Bob.
I'm not going
to
put a spin on it at all. I'm going to tell you a fact. Once upon a time, there was something called a liberal Republican. And those liberal Republicans, the call them Lincoln-esque Republicans, were who supported the Civil Rights Bill.
Well, the
because
whole,
that was during the day, Jeff, of what is called the Solid South.
You're saying that 80% of the Republicans then were liberal Republicans back then?
In large part.
And the Democrat Party was a racist party then, right?
The southern half of the Democratic Party was as racist as the day is long, from George Wallace to Strom Thurmond to Lester Maddox. The list is almost endless.
Well, I just can't believe that the Democrats went to the Republicans who supported the bill in protest because they didn't support the bill. I don't understand that. That doesn't make any sense.
Well, you're the one framing the question, so if it doesn't make sense, you need to look inside your own head, Jeff. But the fact remains, there in many ways, during the Civil Rights era, there was the Democratic Party was almost schizophrenic, okay? Because the Southern Democrats were extremely conservative, proud of it, and racist as hell.
The Southern Democrats?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Well, Johnson said that they had lost the South forever after they done that.
Well, you know, what? That was 64.
South for a generation.
That was 1964, and it would be, what, 6 years before, maybe 7 years, when Nixon, on the heels of George Wallace, invented his Southern strategy, which was part and parcel, nothing but race baiting and playing up to the race fears of white Southern people?
Well,
absolutely. And those white Southern people, those racists, went straight to the Republican Party, and that's why it's such a tiny little tent made up of doughy, pasty-faced white people. You know, look at my party. We got Latinos, we got blacks, we got Asians, we got white people. We've got a fair
like
representation of the
like
whole globe.
This is cabinet.
No.
When you just did that. Yeah,
no,
you got Latinos, you got blacks, you got
no,
women.
In Bush's cabinet, Jeff, you have rich people. That's the one thing they all have in common. Jesus, Mary, and Joseph, Jeff. I mean, the poorest person in that cabinet's got an oil tanker named after her.
Well, name me any poor Democrat in Washington, D.C. that is in a place of high power who's poor.
What are you talking about?
Well, name me one poor person that's ever been a high-ranking United States federal cabinet holder. They don't appoint poor people to them positions.
Well, it depends on how you define poor. I mean, we're talking about multi-millionaires here.
That's what I'm talking about.
No, that's not what you're talking about. There are actually Democrats. You think Dennis Kucinich is a rich man? He's not.
He's a millionaire.
He is not a rich man.
He's not a millionaire.
If he's a millionaire, it's because you're counting his pension. Okay?
I bet he's a millionaire.
Well, okay, you bet me. That's fine, Jeff. But the initial point of your contention was about the Democratic Party at the time of the Civil Rights Movement. I have always said that Southern Democrats were as racist as hell, and that the ones that were really disaffected by the idea that we were going to treat black people like human beings left, and they didn't form their own party, Jeff. They became Republicans on the heels of Nixon's Southern strategy.
Well, did Byrd go to Republican?
No, he did not.
What'd he do?
He repented. He repented of the things that he had formerly believed. Some did repent. Al Gore's father repented. William Fulbright repented. Byrd repented, because there was no way they could stomach the idea of being a Republican. But what it turned out was those filthy racist Southern Democrats, they'd been Republicans all along. Their thinking was more in line with Republican thinking, and you know, like I said, once upon a time there was such a thing as a liberal Republican. You'll note that there aren't anymore. And that's what happened when conservative Southern Democrats took over the Republican Party. They chased out the liberal Republicans who had helped bring about civil rights.
I just disagree.
Well, disagree all you want. You know, disagree about what time the sun's going to rise, Jeff. But you know, disagreeing doesn't make you right. You're wrong on this one again.
The Republicans are not a racist party. You can sue that all you want to, but
Jeff. Jeff,
yes,
Earth calling.
But
how many black Republicans are in the Senate?
What did you say now?
How many black Republicans are in the Senate?
How many were there before?
No. Answer.
In
see,
the Democratic
look
Party.
At you, look
the
at,
Democratic
look at,
Party.
Look at your dodge. Look at your dodge. How many black Republicans are there in the Senate?
There aren't none. But
how many black
Republicans?
How many black? How many black? How many black Republicans are in the House of Representatives? None. None.
How many black governors are there in the Democratic Party?
Don't know.
There aren't any. And you know who the next one will be?
Who?
It's going to be Ken Blackwell, a Republican from Ohio. He has the best chance of being a black governor of any state in the United States.
Oh, that, yeah.
Republican.
Well, of course he does. I mean, he's already had the practice. He fixed the election in Ohio. You know, oh, my God, don't get me on Ken Blackwell.
It says here that Robert Byrd participated in an unsuccessful 74-day filibuster attempt to stop this Civil Rights Act.
Right.
74 days.
And you'll notice it was unsuccessful.
He sure
it
tried.
It was broken. The filibuster was broken, Jeff.
I just can't understand it.
Well, see, you're trying to think about your Republican Party in terms of what it was many, many years ago, when in fact you're not looking at it in its reality today.
Well,
remember,
I don't see
anything. there used to, Jeff, be a black member of the House of Representatives who was a Republican. His name was J.C. Watts. He was from Oklahoma.
Yeah, I know who he's talking about.
And his own daddy said of voting for his son, I love my boy, but a black man voting for a Republican is like the chicken voting for Colonel Sanders. That was J.C. Watts' daddy. I got to take another call, Jeff.
Sure, I appreciate your time.
Sure.
Bye-bye.
All right, and Greg, you're head on. Oh, okay. Sorry, Wayne. Lost Greg. Hey, Wayne.
Hey, I'm sorry, Cuba.
That's okay.
That reminds me of the right name, Arlie Fleischer.
Ari Fleischer, yeah.
Right, the press secretary before this one.
Yeah, when Jimmy Jeff Ganey Guck first got into the White House.
Right. You remember what his father said?
As a matter of fact, I do.
Let's hear it, man.
My son is a Republican. I guess he could be a drug dealer, and that would be worse, but not much.
Right.
I think that was the gist of it, wasn't it?
That's exactly what it was. Very good. Very good. Listen, one of the reasons I called back is I heard you saying about the different people from Atlanta want to develop, you know,
our hilltops
around Fayetteville and, you know.
And now they're going down to Kanawha Falls, yeah.
Kanawha Falls and all that stuff. And you said something about that, you know, building and trades, people would sit down and talk to you.
Yeah.
Something to that effect.
Yeah.
As a building trades representative, I want to confirm that, you know.
Okay.
We have residential things. We also have rules. We're not going to help you build any houses on the rim.
Right, because
we're
it's
not
going
to do that. That belongs to the people.
Yeah,
not to any individual.
Well, see,
people.
And that's the thing down here in Kanawha Falls. The you know this isn't part of the National River System or National Park System. This is just private property, and it's you know it's zoned resident. It's zoned individual ownership conservation right now, and he wants it rezoned commercial residential.
Who's he?
This guy Hosh.
Does he own it now, or he wants to buy it and then rezone? Or he wants it rezoned, then he'll buy it?
No, he owns it, and he wants it rezoned.
Okay. What do his... does he own everything? What's the skinny?
Well, I mean, no, he doesn't own it. He's got 900 acres, and he wants to develop 2,600 beyond that.
Okay.
But, I mean, you know, I used to drive down that road that runs through there every day, and honest to God, I don't know where you're going to build a house, Wayne.
Now, where are we at? 60?
Yeah, U.S. 60, Kanawha Falls, Charlton Heights.
Yeah.
Kanawha Falls, they got it.
Well, I don't know. Have you seen? Have you been down to Greenbrier? Well, you were down to Greenbrier. Your kid went down there to bake a cake or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you seen what they're doing down there?
That's astonishing, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they're selling lots for $250,000. You wouldn't put a doghouse on.
Well, you couldn't.
Well, you couldn't because the incline's so great you'd keep falling backwards.
Well, that and the lot itself is about the size of a postage stamp, isn't it?
A quarter acre.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Then it's straight up or straight down?
The cheapest one's like $250,000.
Yeah, and it's straight up.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. You know, you got to spend a whole bunch of money on excavation and building retaining walls and, you know.
Right, and I mean, isn't that just begging for a replay of California?
Sure it is.
You know, I mean, those houses that hung out over the, you know, over the canyons looked, you know, what, Topanga Canyon or whatever, it looked beautiful.
Yeah.
But they're not so pretty when they've slid down the mountain.
Yeah, some didn't slide either. They just flat fell.
Yeah, just gone.
Yeah, it was amazing. Yeah, it's amazing. But anyway, like I said, we do, and, you know, I mean, that's something I'd love to get, or, well, we're already into the unions, is residential.
Yeah.
And it would be a great apprenticeship opportunity.
Yeah, it would.
For, you know, and, I mean, I think that's something we should, as much as, you know, when people get mad at me because I keep bringing this up, you know, I'd love to see everybody go to college. But the reality of the matter is they're not all going to college.
Right.
And someone that learns a trade, knows his trade, knows how can make it a living.
Exactly.
You know, well, unless, you know, all the rich people decide we can't make a living, which is what they're trying to decide anyway.
Well, you know, what do we want with the workers making more than minimum wage? I mean, that'll be good enough.
Right. Well, you know, it's it amazes me how they think. You know, it's a very, well, it's class warfare. That's what it is.
Well, pure and simple.
That's what we are involved in, and you know, I'm a fight for my class, brother.
Amen.
That's how that goes.
All right.
Okay, man. Have a good one.
All right. Thanks, Wayne.
Bye.
Later. Well, that was a zany little show. And we'll do it again one more time this week, tomorrow night, 7 o'clock. You be here, I'll be here. The show, of course, tonight was produced by the lovely and talented Taylor Skye, engineered by Randy Kerbway, and announced at least in part by Brian Reznor, brought to you as ever by the 20,000 workers of the Affiliated Construction Trades Foundation. If you're working in West Virginia, they are working for you, all of you. Everybody who earns a wage, they're on your side. We're also brought to you every night by our good friends at the West Virginia Pipe Trades. We appreciate it. And, of course, if you want to go back and check the show out again, you're welcome to. Ben Birch archives the show at whiterosesociety.org, and he does a hell of a job doing it. So, wow, wasn't that fun? Hey, Agnes.
Twitter!